a lot of meetings this morning, since 7 o'clock. A lot of committees are coming from the petitions meeting now. I want to apologize about delaying. And I think, yeah, here is our member, our whip coming in. And I think we have to start. If there are others who are coming, will join us. Others who are late. Can we observe a moment of silence for prayer? Thank you. Thank you, Commissioner, and your team. You are welcome. I think this is our first meeting this year. And you know that we've got work to do. People are waiting for us outside there to deliver. That's why we're here. So just be free. Your presentation. No one must be. If I say take your jacket off and they give us this presentation, that I think is going to help your department, it's going to help the parliament, it's going to help also the people outside there. For those of you, you are most welcome, General, and your team. Without wasting time also, members, this is our agenda. I don't know now whether we cannot adopt this agenda. Our three members here, can you adopt this agenda as it is? Oronshanga?
Yeah, sure. Thanks, man. I think it will be wise to, therefore, yes, of course, adopt the agenda as it is. Thank you,
Oronshanga, is anyone seconded? Because we are three. If it's not you, Honorable Zeman, there will be Honorable Malakhiras to second. Thank you. Try to pick up the process. Thank you very much, Honorable Zeman. The agenda is adopted. And the first of, I think we need, because not all of us know each other here. Let's introduce ourselves, more of us as the members, and then the general will introduce her chief. My name is Dumisani, I'm the chairperson of this committee, a permanent delegate from the Western Cape, but originally I was born in the Eastern Cape. Thank you very much, Honorable Sanga.
Yeah, Chair, I thought that as well, adopting the agenda, you will be going to your apologies so that it is recorded. But yes, Chair, I will act as mandated by you. My name, I'm Titus Moses Mshanga. From Mpumalanga, permanent delegate of this select committee. Thank you.
Good morning, Chair. My name is Louis Zemande, member of the committee.
Thank you, Honourable Chairperson. Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. My name is George Mkhalakis. I'm a permanent representative from the Free State. Chairperson, if I can also just apologize for Honorable Chetty, who is in KZN on a by-election, and Honorable Julius, who's taken ill since there was no opportunity for apologies. Thank you.
Thank you. Sonora, can you introduce the officer? Thanks.
Chairperson, thank you very much. And to the honorable members, also thank you for giving us the opportunity to come and engage with the Select Committee on Security and Justice. The team that is with me, I'll start with myself, I'm Ria Pierre, I'm the National Commissioner. With me, I will ask them to just indicate who they are so that you can be able to link the name with the person. Next to me, we have Lieutenant General Mbekela, who is the Deputy National Commissioner for Corporate Service Management. On On the other bench, we have Lieutenant General Skete, who is the Deputy National Commissioner for Resource Management, looking into our finance, our technology management, our facilities management, as well as our strategic sourcing department, our procurement. On the next to him, we have Lieutenant General Sithole, who is the Deputy National Commissioner for Policing, looking at all the policing operations as a Deputy National Commissioner, our detection work, our visible policing, our policing operations, the forensic science, and the protection services. On the other side, we have Lieutenant General Mawela, who is the Divisional Commissioner for Operational Response Services, and he's the man who is also the chairperson of our net joints and is responsible for commandeering the Operation Fiela that you hear about, coordinating all the other departments to ensure that we can work together on this initiative. Next to him, we have Lieutenant General Dr. Zulu, who is the Acting Divisional Commissioner for Crime Intelligence. So she's also joining us here. At our back, we have Major General Menziwa, who is the head of our strategic management. On my left-hand side, we have Colonel Stein, who is from the Executive Secretariat and Information Management in my office, facilitating all our parliamentary work. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, General. Thank you very much for the briefing, for this introduction. Without wasting time, honourable members, I'll give this to the Secretary for the apology.
Yes, Chairperson, we have Honourable Wana, and Honourable Manapoli is attending the Commonwealth Women's Parliament. Honourable Mahapi, Honourable Julius is booked off sick. We've heard from Honourable Michalakis about Honourable Chetty. And Honourable Makwele is also booked off sick.
Thank you very much, Secretary. Members, for today, our agenda, we're expecting the briefing by the Department of Police on the Departmental Strategic Plan, Annual Performance Plan, and Budget Allocation. Then I think, without wasting time, let's hand over to the police or to General to brief us. Thank you, sir. Thank you, General.
Chairperson, let me, on behalf of the service, once more thank you for the opportunity of presenting to the SADC committee our strategic plan for this year, our costing for that plan, as well as the targets that we seek to achieve in terms of outcomes. How we will be going through this presentation, Chair, I will deal with the issues relating to the strategy itself, what informs it, what is it that we are focusing upon, and then when I finish, I will then ask our Deputy National Commissioner for Resources to talk about how we've costed the plan overall. After that, Chairperson, I will then ask the various Deputy National Commissioners to then deal with the targets of their respective portfolios. You will note that in the document that we've given you, at the end of each target presentation, we also again repeat the finances just to show how they are broken down for those particular targets. But they would already have been covered by General Skete when he does the overall one. In the interest of time, as we can see that you also have time limitations, we will focus on the main finance plan, and then this other one that you have after the targets would be more for your reference. Chairperson, let me start off on slide 3, and in that slide 3 we try to show the planning taxonomy, what framework do we influence our planning as a department. We show the issues that relate to the electoral process and manifesto, which then translate into the strategic policy and direction of the ruling party now in government. It turned out into 14 objective outcomes, and out of those outcomes we look for those that actually affect us as a ministry. And then we look at the next leg, which is how we take all the outcomes, the respective and the intended outcomes for our ministry, and align them to our implementation process. Firstly, in that regard, we talk about the clusters signing performance and delivery agreements for the 5-year period, that is that MTFF framework. Then we also look at what we need to consider in terms of the policy direction that is articulated by government, that comes in the form of white papers, NCPS, National Security Strategy, and other relevant government strategic imperatives and relevant legislation. I will indicate some of those in our presentation. We then look at developing sub-priorities, strategic priorities, based on all those issues to say, in this context, what would safety and security mean, and how would we then deliver in terms of that? We then develop our strategic plans on the basis of that. On page 4, we just show again to say, as we do this, Chairperson, we also take cognizance of the fact that the National Development Plan was adopted by this government. And it then becomes a very important pillar in planning, in our planning, because we then start looking on the left-hand side, as you can see there, we're saying the National Development Plan and all those priorities that we've indicated are then put into the medium-term strategic framework. There's a plan of action for government, there's a strategic plan, which is 5 years. What we're looking into now is the in-year program, which looks into the APP. And in terms of the MTSF, we're sitting in year 2 of 5 years. And we show again on the right-hand side, just to start saying, we're sitting with the MTSF that is going to end in 2019. That's where the 5 years is going to end. I then move on, Chairperson, to talk about the National Development Plan, to say which aspects of the National Development Plan affect us directly as the police. We've outlined a number of those key deliverables and key focus areas of the National Development Plan. As you would see, we identify 3 that are affecting us almost closely. At the primary level, very, very directly, you look down at the first column, it's building safer communities. We have a very primary role to play in terms of delivering that as the police. Secondly, we also, like all other departments, as you can see, it's twins there. Like all other departments, we have to make sure that we have a well-oiled machinery in terms of a department that is capable to deliver the outcomes of that building safer communities, and therefore ensuring that we have a capable state that can deliver to the citizens of this country. And then thirdly, it is important for us to promote accountability in terms of our reporting and accounting to those that we service, as well as fighting corruption as a deterrent for good accountability and good delivery. So those 3 areas are quite crucial in terms of the NDP. So you will see that our strategy touches on those 3 areas, because as we work, we must take those into account, because that then talks about the dream of the this country in terms of safety and security by 2010. On slide 6, Chair, we then again just focus on the 14 outcomes that are linked to the MDP, and we show which of those 14 outcomes influence our planning. Outcome 3, that all people in South Africa are and feel safe, taken care of. It influences what we plan and cost our resources for. Outcome 11, Chairperson, creating a better South Africa and a better Africa. You will hear in terms of our plan how we're doing that, our transnational and our transnational crime strategies, and how we cooperate with the neighbors and other, you know, countries globally on how to deal with issues of crime. And outcome 12, an efficient and effective development-oriented public service. What is it that we are doing to ensure that the developmental imperatives of the state are taken care of? How are we recruiting? How are we dealing with issues of access and all those type of issues? How are we improving our own just services to the people? We will touch on those. It will influence our strategies that we will be sharing. Outcome 14 on nation building and social cohesion. Some of the things that we're doing right now as an example, Operation Fiela and working with other departments and working with communities, we will also show how that is influenced in terms of the strategic plan, how it influences our strategic plan for the current year. On slide 8, Chairperson, I then touch on the very specific outcomes that talks to outcome 3, which we said is primary. All people in South Africa are safe and feel safe. What is it that you would, when we mention these outcomes, because they are the outcomes that will tell us that we are winning in terms of delivering that particular outcome. And we will know, we say we will know that we are starting to win to deliver on outcome 3 if we are able to reduce levels of contact crime. We will also note progress if we start seeing that we're starting to have, we're contributing as police towards an efficient and effective criminal justice system. Being the source of this value chain, we should be able to ensure that there are good dockets that are well investigated, good forensic services, public order, and all those type of issues. We also, another sub outcome is about ensuring that the borders are effectively defended, protected, and secured, and well managed. And you will note when we discuss our strategy how we are playing a role there in terms of the broader border management agency, where multi-departments are having a role, and this is why you see it as a multi-departmental role. We show the police with other departments having a role to play there. The fourth outcome, we're saying we have a role to play with other departments to ensure that we secure the cyberspace. So you will see how we are giving that treatment in terms of targets and in terms of our strategy. Then domestic stability is another sub-outcome of outcome 3. We must make sure that South Africa remains stable and there is public order. And this is why we would invest a lot of effort to deal with some of the things that we've seen in the past weeks in Gauteng and in KZN when there were attacks on foreigners. We must make sure that we deal with those issues and make our contributions to contribute towards domestic stability. We address that also in our strategy. Corruption in the public and private sectors is reduced. It is our duty to also ensure that that sub-outcome contributes towards this outcome 3, so we address also that in our strategy chair. On slide 9, the other background that we take into account when we deal with our strategy chairperson is the constitutional remit that we have, because our job description is well articulated in the constitution itself, section 205(3). We can ignore the A. As indicated, the constitution requires that we prevent, combat, and investigate crime. We maintain public order. We protect and secure inhabitants of the public as well as their property, and uphold and enforce the law. So we embrace that in our strategy. We also look to the Constitution as it tells us about how we should deliver the service. So we go to Section 195 to look at the values we should plan for and embrace in how we deliver our services. And finally, we also look at Chapter 2, which says not only do you have to embrace particular values, but there are rights that you need to take into account. So the Bill of Rights also influences how we plan our programs, should make sure that we embrace those type of issues. And then we recognize that there's an array of applicable legislation and powers and functions that actually impact on how we plan. We take that into account. And finally, the code of conduct of staff, as well as the performance management tools that are adopted by government for the entire government service. So all those issues are taken into account. In chapter 10, in slide 10, chapter 10, we also show, as again, just summarize other things, strategic planning consultation process. It's also informed by, as I've already indicated, the manifesto of the ruling party, the MTSF strategic goals, the national development plan, and then on point 3, we also look at what the president pronounces in terms of the state of the nation address, because we have to make sure that those pronouncements are put into action in terms of our planning and our role out of our plan. We take into account key ministerial priorities, because as the executive, the minister will also interpret a lot of these issues and outline some of the issues that are a priority to him as the executive. So we take those into account. Then from a leadership point of view, Chairperson, I also have a lot of specially orchestrated sessions where I engage with the leadership of the organization to start saying, with all this, you know, before us, what is it from an operations point of view that we would need to blend with all these priorities? So all those engagements where we reach out our top 1,500, the sessions that I have with the various structures of management, the NMF, the DOC, all those chapters and become very important in informing how we further shape our plans. On slide 11, again, we also show that there are a number of other things that we take into account, intra- and interdepartmental initiatives. We look at the work, for instance, that we are doing with the Department of Monitoring and Evaluation, because if you look at this outcome 3, it's got two pillars. We talk about the R, which is the statistics, to say how do you tell people that you are achieving in terms of people being safe. You use your statistics to show them that when we announce our tests, this is how we've managed to push back the crime. And the feel is a perception one, to say you can talk your numbers, but people must feel safe also. So we are starting to work with departments such as that one, DPME, to develop tools to start measuring perception. One of the programs we are having is a citizen-based monitoring program, which is in pilot, and it's an advanced pilot. We also are involved, Chairperson, in looking at how we look at the, you know, the frontline delivery platform of policing, which is the police station. And we're saying, what type of frontline platform do we require as we march towards 2030? So we've started a program, the Frontline Service Delivery Project, where we're piloting in 9 stations. We'll, after the pilot, we'll roll out to 500, because we've identified 72 primary indicators where we're saying at least each station must fulfill those 72 indicators. And it ranges from just looks at the garden, the service center, how does it look, do they have the necessary, you know, equipment, all those type of things. How does the station look in order to serve the people? Do those people who are in the counters, are they trained in customer service so that they can do certain things? How do we give feedback to those that come to our center? So it's those type of things. So we started that program. Then we're also using the victims of crime survey. We have a partnership and an MOU that we signed with SSA because it's another tool that we're using. They do an independent structured research that goes out to the communities to check with the communities how they feel about crime in the country. So it's another tool of checking the field, whatever. We've just included a third one, which is what we do with GCIS. They have an offering where they check perceptions in terms of various departments. So we give them our set of questions, they check, and then we get feedback. So we're using multiple tools to start checking how people feel about the services that the police are servicing. Then we take into account, Chairperson, the recommendations that we get from oversight structures such as yourself. When we leave here, the questions you'll be asking us, the recommendations you're giving us, we have to embrace them in our planning. Finally, we look at what we call a combined assurance, what the audit, the AG does, and the feedback that they give us, what our internal audit also does, and the feedback they give us. We also have an inspectorate, as well as our audit committee. All those recommendations are taken into account, and we respond to them. On slide 12, Chairperson, it's just a framework of planning. All the departments follow that, and it just shows month by month how we follow that process. The green part is what we are concluding now as we come to you, because we're presenting to you our strategic plans and just show how they develop over the months when we submit what second draft when, and now we present it to you so that Parliament can now look at our budget and our plan and approve, and then we're going into the implementation mode, which is that second part that looks a little bit pinkish or fawnish. So we are when we get onto that one, we implement once it's approved. We then give quarterly reports to yourselves, to Treasury, to all the oversight bodies, up until we get to the fourth quarter, the auditing takes place, and the cycle goes back again. On slide 13, Chair, I just want to clarify to the honourable members that as we present today, as a police, we present two votes. But one vote comes to you, the other goes to the KSCI. Because we are given a budget as a department, what we are presenting today is the plan for vote 23 as well as its budget. And then we have a closed part, which is the votes that we receive from Treasury, and we account for that at the JSCI. It deals with our covert work in our crime intelligence, and that is vote 7. And the DPCI currently is still sitting in vote 23, and it will remain in vote 23 because Treasury is not planning to have a separate department for DPCI. However, in terms of complying with the law as well as the outcomes of the court, we have to reference their allocation. So as an accounting officer, I would look at their plans and then reference their allocation. What Treasury has proposed is that we normally present our strategy and our plans on 5 programs. So the agreement is that we will include a 6th program. Processes are very advanced to ensure that we register GPCI as a 6th program. Ring-fence, they will have their own sub-strategy, their own sub-targets. We will allocate the money, and when they come, I will come as the accounting officer to listen to them, present to you, and to see whether indeed when I account for the entire vote 23, even the resources that they are given, my duty is more being an accounting officer. They would do their respective plans and everything for themselves. Yes. Chairperson, on slide 14, I then say, having said all those issues that inform us as an organization, the following strategic priorities are identified to guide the realization of the sub-outcomes, the strategic sub-outcomes of our plan, as well as the dealing with the MTSF period for the current year as well as the coming year. What have we identified as our priorities? Our operational priorities, Chairperson, are one, to prevent crime. Secondly, we have an operational priority to ensure that there's public order in the country. So we police the maintenance of public order and law enforcement in the country. Thirdly, Chairperson, it is our duty as police to prioritize the investigation of crime. So first we prevent, but if it passes that net, we must make sure that we investigate. And then we also realize that it is necessary to, when we investigate, to have support for the investigation of crime. And this is why we would have crime intelligence as a support for investigation. This is why we will have forensic science as a support for investigation of crime. So crime intelligence is there, as we're saying, to look also at giving support in the investigation, but also to be preemptive, to look at, you know, using the platform of crime intelligence to advise us on other drivers that we may not even be aware of in terms of the work that we're doing. Then, on the right-hand side of that slide, Chairperson, we're saying, for those priorities to be delivered and those that are sitting there working, they need to be supported. So our support services focuses on budget and resource management, human and capital development, as well as ensuring that people have the systems and the technology that assist them to be able to do their business. So those priorities that we've identified and the people that are working on those priorities are having also part of this strategy, talking about how we then have support services to do that. So you will see that also coming through in our plan. On slide 15, Chairperson, I then move on to strategic outcome-oriented goals. These outcomes contain various focus areas, Chairperson, and I will be presenting them below as goal statements. And they form part of our strategic plan for 2014-2019. Some of them will be rolling out, some of them would be maybe looking at this particular year, but they are spread out over that MTSF year. I start off with our strategic outcome-oriented goal one, the goal statement as well as the strategic priorities, which is the fact that we say all people in South Africa are and feel safe. How are we going to do that, Chairperson? We say we will be providing police services that ensure safer communities by doing some of the following issues. We would like, Chairperson, to reduce the number of all serious crimes, including contact crimes. We would like to increase activities to prevent and combat crime, including cross-border crimes. We're looking at promoting community participation because we do believe that we can't do it alone. We're also in that process as we go out and outreach to communities and make them part of our crime prevention process. We're also supporting the President's call to say, let's take government to the people. In our department, it would be let's take safety and security to the people and engage them in working with us. We talk about partnership policy in Chairperson, where we're looking at mutually leveraging our capabilities and resources. In this regard, Chairperson, I would like to say we partner, for instance, with the banks and have an association that we work through to say, let's exchange intelligence, let's work together. The subric would be one of those. We partner with the retailers. We would work with the Consumer Goods Council so that how we manage the malls, how we deal with retailing, how we deal with drug trafficking, drug checking, we work with them because they have the information, they have the plan. So partnership policy is trial ready case docket for all serious crimes, including contact crimes. It's not enough for us sufficient to arrest, but we're saying as we arrest, we want to start looking at our numbers of arresting, clearly being complemented by our ability to achieve convictions. So this trial ready dockets are very crucial for us. So the detectives are very crucial in ensuring that we increase that rate. So we're also talking about the increasing of the detection rate for all serious crimes and particularly contact crimes, which is a problem for us in the country. You would note if you look at our statistics to say what are the areas where we're struggling to reduce significantly. Contact crimes are a problem. It shows the violence that our society is being subjected to, and these are crimes that are after the fact, largely for police. But we need to look at that and look at the various mechanisms that we are having to increase detection, as well as to ensure that we can have maybe even prevention around those type of issues. Chairperson, strategic outcome goal-oriented 2 deals with a better South Africa and a better Africa and a better world. What will we be looking at there? We're looking at contributing towards a peaceful and secure, stable Africa through deployment of staff members. As the cabinet decisions, we're having some in Sudan. We participate in missions such as Lesotho, so as and when it is necessary for us to participate in this type of initiatives, as the government would require, we deploy our police to participate there. We also enhance relations with Southern African Regional Police Chiefs Cooperation Organization. So at SADC, we have an association of police chiefs, and we have a number of cross-SADC-oriented initiatives, whether it's training, whether it's joint operations, whether it's just relationship building. So there's a lot of work that we're doing there. We also have another one where it's us, the police, defense of the region. We meet and do a lot of work together. And I want to say at this point in time, we are chairing the SACCO as the South African Police Service, and it's a very valuable relationship building mechanism. We also are part of Interpol. We have an Interpol unit within the police. We're part of the SADC Interpol Regional Bureau, and we are participating in the establishment of AFRIPOL under AU, and I'm representing SAPCO in that initiative, so we're also looking at Pan-African policing cooperation. We are doing a lot around these various platforms to address transnational crime. There are a number of binational and multinational engagements that we get involved in, BRICS and others, and country-to-country initiatives. So there's a lot that we're doing in terms of that sub-outcome 2. Sub-outcome 3, goal 3, Chairperson, deals with an efficient and effective developmental-oriented public service. What is it that we're doing as the police and are rolling out in terms of our strategy? We're talking about improving service delivery in terms of quality as well as access. I've already touched on the fact that we have implemented and we are again embracing the implementation of that program in this strategy of the frontline service delivery program, and the core focus is to ensure that the station, which is the face of policy, facing the communities, is taken, given attention to. So as I've already touched on that, the frontline service delivery program was piloted in the 9 programs, in the 9 stations, but also in all the new stations that were opening. And as soon as we finish the pilot, we are rolling out to the next 500 stations, and then we will finalize the remainder as we go on. Secondly, we're talking about improving access to police services by building new police stations, by introducing mobile units. We have a relationship, a memorandum of understanding with CSIR, where they are currently modeling a mobile unit for us where we can start servicing a number of the scattered rural areas where, you know, policing could reach the people, because it's going to take us time to build stations in all these areas. We're also increasing our contact points, working also with the chiefs, for instance, their tribal authorities becoming contact points so that we can at least reach, you know, as many people as we can, because the infrastructure architecture of policing has been very urban biased. So we need to start looking at how we break that through some of these things. And then we also, in terms of access, chairperson, have focused on victims of support facilities. Each of our stations, we're building these victim-friendly facilities. They are already in over 900 stations, and we're hoping to complete the remaining 134, 138 victim-friendly facilities. And the idea is to say some of those challenging crimes of women, children, the vulnerable, they must get a safe space where they can be given attention, if, you know, in those secure type facilities. Secondly, Chairperson was saying, would like to change policing into a public services, a service that is a career of choice, and we're starting to realize that. We have implemented our new, we have implemented the recruitment to retirement strategy, within which we have revised our recruitment, our recruiting strategy, because we're now making it community-based. It's no longer just putting it in the press and waiting for people to apply. We go out, we create awareness, we teach, we tell people what it is. There's a whole self-assessment process. We engage, and even, you know, right up to the final point where communities participate, we put the names on the public newspapers, the local newspapers. They can see who is there. We ask them, once we have done all the other processes of screening the members, to say, these are the members that seem to be qualified. Are these the people you want to be your police? And we've also put together what we call community boards that advise us finally to say, yes, we agree. There have been no issues in terms of these members. And we've seen our uptake. I think we were always attracting we were getting 40 to 50,000 or so. This year alone we got over 228,000. So it's starting to show that interest in policing, and if I look at the quality of the person we are recruiting, we're starting to recruit very young, committed people. But what we've also added to this program is a 2-week grooming camp program, where we're starting to say we want to test the DNA of policing. We check attributes, we've developed conventions, we check attributes such as patriotism, integrity, you know, passion and commitment towards policing. And that 2-week camp does a lot for us. So we're starting to see the breed of police that we're recruiting is the type of police that will help us achieve some of these NDP goals that we're talking about. We're also talking about having sufficient and technical professional skills. What are we doing in that regard? We're implementing our training provisioning plan, and we're tracking it. Each department must give us their training provisioning plan to say who are they training, what are they training them on, and we measure them and track whether that has happened. We also are introducing a number of external and international training intervention partnerships which are assisting us. For instance, we're having the Belgians coming on board, because we invest a lot in leadership training, because we do believe that leadership is a game changer. The Belgians are on board in training, for instance, our cluster commanders. So they go to the university in Pretoria, they're trained on that. We've introduced, you know, international training for our lieutenant generals. for the first time in the history of SAP. They go to VET, they will also go to Harvard to be exposed to leadership training. So we're doing a number of those things. Old Mutual has come on board as part of our frontline service delivery in training our cluster commanders and our station commanders. They go to their management training institute where they are trained on leadership and management. So we're introducing a number of training initiatives to assist.
It's not only politicians who go to Hamas. You also take police.
Yes, we are, because we really want to modernize our policy and to professionalize it so that when we come here, you can have some bit of belief in our strategy. Okay. We've also reported to this committee chair that our PAL Academy, which offers a Bachelor of Policing under the license of UNISA, that is doing very well. And I went to see the first years that have, you know, graduated course two, and I looked at their pass rate. We were totally awed. And what we had done in terms of their business model, we were saying, work with us. We're not just going to pay everything for you. We pay for their tuition, their stay, and their meals, accommodation, and they paid in the first year for their own tuition. They were contributing something like 12,000, and you could see the commitment. But once they passed, we then got people who are now participating in the program. All teachers came on board, they pay for their tuition, so they have a bursary, a tuition bursary. So you can see that they come, they're prepared to put their money in, we put whatever we put in, and they work hard. And the quality that we see there is really, it's explosive and it's very encouraging. So that's part of what we're doing. We're implementing internship, learnership, and artisanship programs. Like the previous year, we had a number of artisans that were trained in garage mechanics because we have problems with our cars. We've absorbed how many? 51 of them that started training. We are on a new intake. We've taken a new intake, for instance, of our internal audit because we really want compliance in terms of what we're doing. We've taken in 65 for this year. So we have a number of internships and learnerships that we're dealing with. We are looking at, we're talking to the staff SA, where we're looking at absorbing new interns for our statistical management because we want the integrity of our statistics. So it's a lot that we're also doing in that space. We're taking some in from Pretoria University into our firearms registry. So we are creating skills for young people, and where we have posts, we're then able to absorb them as we go forward. We're also looking, Chairperson, in terms of that specialized professional skills into what developing and implementing lateral or crosswise recruitment program. What we're looking at here, Chairperson, for instance, as an example, we're looking at children who have a degree in policing or a degree in criminology or a degree in law. We are looking at taking them in and training them instead of 2 years of policing, giving them a year of policing like other countries are doing, and then appointing them into our police service, because as we lose them, we're using multiple platforms to intake new police that we need. We also, Chairperson, are talking about an efficient and effective management of operations, institutionalizing our government. A model, Chairperson, has been developed and we've institutionalized it. We have subcommittees, committees for HR committees, we have finance committees, we have a technology management investment, we have integrity committees. So we've done a lot in terms of upping the governance of policing, and I think we are winning in that space, but we've embraced it again as we go forward. In terms of our technology, we realize that e-policing is a given. We must find, you know, a very sound technology strategy, and was very advanced in terms of that. We presented to our other portfolio committee the work that we're doing with CSIR to frame that space and to ensure that we have a powerful technology strategy, because we are the platform from which the JCPS value chain starts. We're talking about procurement systems that deliver value for money, and we are aligning SAP's procurement with the government turnaround strategy for procurement. We are purifying and implementing our procurement and facilities management functions. We've separated them, Chairperson, because they are in themselves very large portfolios. SCM was also responsible for facilities management. We now have a new portfolio for facilities management because, as you know, Chairperson, we are the second largest, we are the largest client that is serviced by DPW. So it's a portfolio that is significant, that requires very special attention, because we need to ensure that it is maintained, our leases are taken care of, where we have to build, we build. So that is why we separated the two portfolios. We now have a Lieutenant General that is responsible for this portfolio, and we hope that we'll be able to give more traction in terms of managing that one, Chairperson. CSIR, as we said, our memorandum of agreement, part of that is to assist us. It's buying correctly, ensuring, assisting us in our systems and technology environment, as well as ensuring that we innovate. So part of that is our intelligent procurement, Chairperson, that we're looking into and improving. The other area in this area is improved mechanisms to prevent corruption and public service. What we've done, we've established a dedicated integrity management capability. There is a portfolio and a function that is structured to just look into that. We've just taken a decision at the NMS. They were presenting to us their framework, and we're very happy with where we're going. We will have a very well-managed integrity and ethics environment within policy. The implementation of the financial disclosure framework is very advanced. In terms of our MPET, we are ranking very high, above 98% in terms of those disclosures. Where there are issues, the SIU does come back and we deal with those type of aspects. Vetting, we have upped our game in this regard, and you see some of the targets that the CI is talking about in terms of our vetting. We have enhanced the capacity there. We're training our vetting teams in CI, and we have prioritized, because SAPS is large, we've prioritized SCM employees, we've prioritized a number of areas where we'll be focusing on. In terms of the SMS, I think we're sitting at about 90% in terms of our vetting. We've gone for vetting at SSA because we don't sell vet as the NMF. We are vetted by SSA, so we're very advanced in terms of that one. I've touched on the grooming camps as part of our integrity, because after they've gone through their physical, our recruits, after they've filled in the forms, physical, health, all those type of issues and qualifications, we take them in for 2 weeks for that integrity testing and integrity assessment, so that we can use them. And strengthened accountability to citizens, indeed, I've also touched on those to say we're looking at how else we can enhance our accounting beyond the AG, all those issues around citizen-based monitoring, the checking that we're doing with CCIS, the work that we're doing with victims of crime survey with SFSA. So there are a number of platforms that we're using to test our accounting and feeding back to the community. Strategic outcome oriented goal 4, Chairperson, talks to nation building and social cohesion. We're doing a lot of inward looking work to ensure that you know, we as a service embrace knowledge of the Constitution and fostering constitutional values. You would have noted an article that was in a press conference that was done by Gauteng yesterday, for instance, of our members who have gone out to do, you know, to commit a very heinous crime of killing victims. We don't waste time, Chairperson, when those type of issues come, because we have, everybody understands, we have prescripts, we have protocols. We would make sure that the criminal process takes its course and the internal process takes its course almost immediately. And I'm very appreciative of the fact that whilst there could be from time to time an incident here and there, ordinarily, you know, we manage to run a service that is seriously, seriously intolerant of brutality. We deal with those type of issues, Chairperson, and comparatively speaking, if you look at the history of brutality in policing and you look at policing in this democratic dispensation, we've come a long way and we remain very focused as management to deal with those type of issues. There are issues around demilitarization and civilianizing the police. A lot of work has been done, the training that we've been talking about on leadership to ensure that we're a police that embraces the rights of people, the institutionalization of the code of conduct, and we are also having what we call community consultant service charters as part of our frontline service delivery. It's one thing to print a charter, a service charter, and say, here's a service charter for all the police stations. But our service charters, as within in those 9 pilot stations, we sit with the community to say, what do you want to see? What do you want to get as a service from this station? And all those values that are communicated by the station will then be committed into a service charter for that particular station, because we would have engaged with the communities to say, what do they want? So it is a new one. So in this 9 pilot stations, you will not get our old service charter, which was standard. You will find different charters because we talk to the communities to say, what do you want to see? And then that is committed into a service charter. So we're looking, the next 500 that we're going into, we also want to call out that type of approach. Equalizing opportunities, promoting inclusion and redress. Chair, I can say all those issues that were raised in there, we're still sitting at about 34% women in the leadership environment. I think we are doing, we're pacing much faster than the broader organization. So we're giving all those issues attention. I would also mention that in terms of women empowerment, we have, for instance, a special women leadership program that we're running with the UNISA Business School that is offered at PAL. We had the first graduating last year. How many were they? 60? 52? This year the intake is how much? So we took another round this year where we're focusing on leadership, but we're looking at the gender side of it to say, being in an environment that is male dominated, how do we empower women to be able to lead in this service? So that program we're doing with the Business School of UNISA. The last one in this is about promoting active citizenry and broad-based leadership. The integrated approach to building community participation, and I must say the police are doing a lot in that space. I looked at the steps that was taken, that was shared at the Cabinet of Quota, where the police talked to all the departments in terms of their community outreach initiatives, because we are a community-based service. We have to be out there. We're invited by many churches. We're invited by various organizations where they really join hands with us to whatever. So we do a lot of community outreach, and it's also happening in the Secretariat. So the policy, the portfolio, is doing a lot in terms of community outreach. We also make sure where there are community policing forums, we work with them. The utilization of the reservists is also very helpful. Then there's an issue of strategic partnerships. If you can just click that hyperlink. Is it working? Okay. I've touched on some of those strategic partnerships where I was talking about the work that we do with the banks, the work that we do with the oil companies, the work that we do with the retail sector, the work that we do with the university. share, for instance, the research that they do on policing, safety and security, and we use those. We have the first colloquium where we were discussing some of those research issues with the university. So there are a number of platforms where we are having these partnerships that one has indicated. Goal 5, Chairperson, talks to promoting accountability and fighting corruption. We believe that we have, you know, we'll do that by building a resilient anti-corruption system, investigation of corruption-related cases. In our detective environment, we have established what we call a national investigation unit. It looks at, you know, those high-profile corruption-related cases, and then we're able to lift them from the province and be able to deal with those. Capacitating the DPCI investigating capability, they are assisting us quite a lot, and we're also supporting them because we can only benefit from DPCI more than see them as a walk-alone entity. So that is very helpful. The enhancement of discipline management capability, we're busy with the trial units. We're launching the trial units because we're saying, yes, the law would say discipline is a line function, whatever, but we want skilled people who make sure that we have standardized outcomes, speed in terms of dealing with disciplinary and efficiency. So we're introducing trial units. The establishment of dedicated integrity management capability. I've already mentioned that we now have a portfolio that is dealing with it. It's a sub-function, and we're very advanced in terms of that. The structure is approved, the framework we approved in our last NMF, and it's a very promising environment, encouraging timely reporting of corruption-related activities so that we can deal with it. So, for instance, an arrest of a policeman beyond acid is a reportable matter, and not only for the statistics, but also to see whether the concomitant disciplinary action does take place. We also would achieve that by strengthening accountability. I've already mentioned issues relating to that. Creating a transparent, responsive, and accountable public service. We're talking about vetting of some of our contractors and supply chain management personnel, streamlining and re-engineering the bid and procurement processes. I've touched on a number of those issues to say we're revisiting our procurement and make sure that certain things happen. On slide 20, Chairperson, we then touch on some of those issues that have been raised during the State of the Nation address. Some are sitting under reduction of serious crimes, and they're outlined there. Some are sitting under combating corruption. They're outlined there. These are all the issues that came in the various State of the Nation address, current and maybe in the past 3 years. Addressing equity, we address those. We safety programs, domestic stability, regional and continental partnerships, employing people with disabilities, enhance a national infrastructure plan. We track them, we're able to show which ones we're focusing on, which ones, how far are we, which ones have we completed. So those are some of the things that we take into account. On page 21, we show, for instance, some of the ones that the old priorities and the new priorities. The yellow would show that the blue would be the new ones that came in the current State of the Nation. The yellows would be the carryovers that we're still dealing with, just to show, as I was saying, that we check them to show what we're doing with those priorities that came from the State of the Nation. On page 22, we then deal with what the executive, being our minister, has identified as a priorities that we embrace in our planning. He's identified those four key priorities, strengthening the criminal justice system, which is also sitting with the other priorities. So we embrace that, the professionalization of the police service, the demilitarization of the police service, as well as this community outreach, building safety using an integrated approach. So those are some of the issues. Other critical imperatives that we're taking into account here, present on slide 23, is the issue of, I've touched on that one, modernization of our human resources management. And indeed, there's an issue around looking into towards a single public service. And then we are looking tightly into how we migrate from an official, from a national statistic to an official statistic, like your census. Your official statistics would be your census. They're a national test. Currently, we're releasing an official statistic. So we signed a national statistics. We signed a memorandum of agreement with SA, and we're working towards that. And there are certain standards that we must meet. They are ISO-related, so we're working together in terms of that. We have touched on the frontline service. We're institutionalizing that because we want to roll out this frontline service to all the stations. Community outreach is a pillar that sits very tight in terms of our strategy. On slide 24, Chairperson, we then deal with other relevant policy imperatives and strategies that influence our plans that we take into account. For instance, the national security strategy or our public order policy. So it's a number of strategies that we've given there that actually influence how we plan. We must take them into account because we are a contributor and a participant in them. National Drug Master Plan is sitting with social development, but we have a very important role to play there, so we must show how we contribute towards that strategy. So that chairperson talks to our strategic framework and our strategic plan. Then we can move on here to slide number 25, where I'm going to ask the translator to then come in and maybe to just build a passage in terms of it. All the chairperson, we then package into five key programs that, informs how we roll out our strategy. Our program one is administration. And in the administration program, it's largely your support type services. It will also include the ministry, because we have to give them resources so that the ministry can be run. Then there's management, there's corporate services, there's office accommodation, there's all those issues that are talking to the support functions that we have managed, we have mentioned earlier on. All those will be sitting in program one. Then we have the largest program, which is our visible policy. Our visible policy would include our crime prevention, our border security, our public order services, all police uniform activities. Program 3, Chairperson, will deal with our detection work, the detectives, our forensic science laboratories, and that's where all this is sitting. And then Program 4 will be our crime intelligence, and Program 5 will be our protection services, whether it's the presidential protection services or the other generic protection services. So the program as is going to be presented, as well as the finances, will be focusing on how we have chunked the rollout of that strategy in terms of those five programs. On that note, Chairperson, let me then ask General Skete to walk us through how we cost then the strategy that we have shared with General Skete.
Thank you, Chairperson. The first slide is slide 26 now, and where we consider aspects from a resource point of view. As point of departure, we first look at our source documents as tabled in Parliament, It is well known, but these documents are our primary documents in the operating environment, which SEPs also accounted for. And as we well know, they are the Red Book, Estimates of National Expenditure, as well as then also our Annual Performance Plan, and also our Strategic Plan, where you have alignment and even to a certain extent a little bit of reference in the one to the other. This was just to put the basics in place. They are being compiled according to specific directions by the National Treasury in this regard. If we then go to slide 27, and the purpose of this slide is to provide a graphic illustration of the total amounts allocated to the vote pulleys over a period of time. In order for me to describe, there are six bar charts, or bars, to be precise. In 2012, 13, and 13, 14, and 14, 15, which was an MTF period, we grew from 63.2 billion to 72.5 billion. It was an average annual growth of 7.8%. And the growth was due to the increased personnel and also infrastructure. If we look at the next 3 years, that is 15-16, the current financial year, which are we're currently in, and going to 17-18, that would be year 3, the average growth will be in the vicinity of 6%, and those 3 years relate directly to slide 29, as we will describe it a bit later. This gives one an overview over a 6 year period from 63 billion to 86.4 billion. Now, what does it mean? We have a graphic illustration there and color coded, and one can see the step change. But what does it mean? We say that in the overview of the expenditure estimates, we refer to certain aspects. But before I refer to them, as we all know, we are a very, very challenging economic climate, sir. And especially in recent times. And it was a rigorous budget process, and the budget process has a lengthy time lapse with the National Treasury, and eventually Ministers Committee on the Budget, Cabinet, and today we sit here in Parliament. Introducing certain measures as additional funds were not readily forthcoming. So, the first aspect, it's slide number 28, Kevin, is baseline allocations over the medium term grew from 76.3 billion in 2015-16 to 83.6 billion in 2017-18 at an average annual rate of 6%. I've already said it, and this is basically the first observation. Then we also say baseline allocations over the period 15-16 to 17-18 have also been amended and to the following extent. Cabinet approved reductions to the baselines of the department over the medium term period, meaning that baselines are not decreasing, but the growth is now slower, to the value of 517.1 million in 15-16, 1.240 billion in 16-17, and 802 million in 17-18. This happened across basically government or state departments. But these reductions were affected from goods and services as current expenditure, comprising of 366.3 million in the current financial year, 586.4 million in the next financial year, and then 634.9 million in the year 3 or 17-18. Furthermore, 150.8 million in 15-16, 653.2 million in 16-17, and 167.1 million were removed from payments for capital assets, which refer to buildings and other fixed structures and transport equipment. So, the increases, the previous MTF increases have been reduced. Still increases, but they have been reduced. What did they then do after the process as well? Of these amounts, 352.9 million in the current year, 372.3 million in the next financial year, and 790.9 million in 2017-18 have been reallocated as added back to provide for higher personnel remuneration costs in each of the 3 years that the main budget provided for, and the replacement of transport equipment in 2017-18. In essence, what this slide means, there was a reduction, basically from goods and services, and from capital. Then there was also simultaneously, or subsequently, technically speaking, an add back for higher remuneration costs, chairperson, and then also for transport equipment specifically, because money was taken away. I'm going to refer back to the slide, because when we get to the goods and services slide, you will see it goes down and then it picks up again, for instance, for vehicles. Be that as it may, sir, if we might now go to 29, slide number 29. And, chairperson, from our point of view, this is the essence. What does this thing, in very broad strategic terms, refer to? What do we provide for? We provide to maintain our personnel capacity. At least provide funds for in the vicinity of 198,000 hours for 42 people in that vicinity. So we provide for our personnel levels. Now, as we always say, and the National Commission referred to, if we have a lot of personnel, and I think we are the biggest employer in South Africa, you have to train them and keep on training. Whether it is for public order policing, whether it is for management, whether it is for whatever, and a lot of entry-level personnel as well, so we have to skill to also develop their skills. That also leads to professionalization of the police service, which is embedded in the NDP. Then also, sir, continue strengthening of the criminal justice system by means of the criminal justice sector revamp and modernization process. So this is also an NDP objective, sir, which are highly, highly credibly funded. And it includes a few elements, an IT element, an operational element, it has 7 principles, and it has a main focus on investigation and crime scene management in a direct and even indirect manner. So we have also funded this, and this is a very significant amount. These amounts can be seen also under Program 1, for instance, where the details are available, and Program 3. Now, then also, we invest in physical resources and capital infrastructure. We try to maintain what we have and then also replace what needs to be replaced. So, sir, all in all, this, in essence, is the core of the 2015-16 budget. And these activities support also, then, the JCPS cluster objective of creating safer communities and contribute towards ensuring that people in South Africa are and feel safe. That outcome 3 that was referred to in previous slides, slide number 8 to be precise, by the National Commissioner. Communities are and feel safe, and then it has sub-outcomes. So this slide is what we say. It is safe. So, all in all, it serves a very important cluster objective on an operational level. And as I've said, maintain our personnel, because the personnel is intensive. We try to train as best as we can. And then also, we have to address the whole linkage of the system per se, whether you want to call it IJS, CJS, JTPS, the fact of the matter is, from the police, as the National Commission said, as the starting point, up to correctional services with justice in between and even social development, home affairs, and so forth. So this is the essence. Now, this is from a strategic level. Now, it is not to say that we are only spending on priorities. You still have to do your community safety center work, your police station work, and so forth. It is expected of us. It's embedded in legislation and so forth. But if we now break this down and we go more specifically, That would then, some of the priorities will be in slide number 30. They are also included in the APP, where we now say, let's break it down a little bit more, and we say the implementation, and these are a number of prominent priorities. It is, as I said, however, not to say that they are, that other obligations and functions should not be performed. But these are very important priorities which we would like to highlight to the committee today. The implementation of an integrated CJS to ensure a single coordinated management of criminal justice and performance, focusing on funding for forensic services and a broader detective service in SAS to enhance crime investigations. The more effective or efficient we can become in investigating crimes, the better we will do, in layperson's language. This will include selected visible policing aspects such as training of MIOs, MICs, legal administrators, and community mobilization initiatives. So I've also said indirect benefit for crime scene management. Who is the first person on a crime scene? It is not a detective per se, it's a visible person. The visible person is there when the response is. So and you want to get away from the fact that crime scenes are being contaminated and all of those things which are highly technical of nature. Then we say provision for equipment and training for detectives to enhance the process of investigation of crime. In that amount, if I remember correctly, is 54 million, which we will spend this year on specifically training of detectives. And we say we try to train as much as possible, because if you increase those skills levels even further, you can only do better. Then maintaining a capacity that allows for interventions through external deployment. The person sitting behind me, General Mawela, is also responsible for external deployments. And it includes Darfur and so forth. We also have a baseline amount for that. That's external, outside the borders of South Africa. Then, but before I go further, there's also a deployment baseline for inside South Africa for community protests, which might arise, or any of those kind of incidents that might occur. Obviously very, very difficult to project, because will it happen, if it happens, how will it happen, and where will it happen? But we have created baseline in this regard. Some years it might be a little bit less, but other years it might be more. There's also an increased baseline in this regard. Then also the establishment of victim-friendly facilities, sir. You will also see in our strategic plan, if you take that blue book, you will see we have listed the victim-friendly facilities that we would like to address in year 1, 2, 3, 4, and 5. So we've provided in our whole capital environment, our facility environment, also for victim-friendly facilities, Chairperson. If we then go to slide number 31, then we also say investment in capital equipment to support basic policing services such as vehicles. I will address this one specifically when we get to the items. The standard chart of accounts is the latest slide. The items that we use in order to, the goods and services in order to pursue your objectives. Then also maintain and try to replenish the fixed-wing aircraft and helicopter fleet, including the procurement of requisite physical resources and the replacement of existing, sorry, it's not exciting, I hope they're excited, but it's existing personnel. Firstly, you have aircraft, you must maintain them. Very, very, very expensive item, so you have to maintain them at least. We've done it through Arms Corps in the past, we will probably go a different route, a more direct route now. Be that as it may, they need to be maintained. We've purchased in the vicinity of 13 helicopters the past 12 or 13 years, but we also have to start looking at the replacement scenario, because ORS environment need more, and we have to go on. And it's a very expensive item if you start putting on flares and camera, so we will have to start looking at the replacement program going forward, because that's the kind of item where you have to tick every year. You can't do massive number of them in any one year, but you have to tick. See that as a trend. Then, as I said, also, and then the following is the policing of major events. There are so many major events in our country, and it has to, or most of them, has to be bullied or secured. And that also take quite a lot of funds. Purchasing of critical equipment such as firearm, ammunition, and clothing. We in our environment internally always say there are actually four very important critical items. You have to have your firearms. You have to have your ammunition for training and for use whenever in an appropriate manner. You have to have clothing, which include bullet-resistant vests. And the fourth one is you need to have vehicles. Then also, sir, community outreach programs, Izimbizu, and community-based recruitment programs, and heeding the call by the President to take government to the people. The National Commissioner in a previous slide also referred to this interaction, the community aspect, which is so important to do proper policy. Then also to conduct high-risk operations of various kinds, and as I said, because I've linked it to the internal and external deployments, the policing of community protests. Then, sir, if we go again to another illustration, slide number 32, this is merely to try and make the numerical side more interesting, to give you a weight, and say, if you look at the funds we have on those programs, what are we going to spend on which program? Now, firstly, sir, you will see that the biggest program, obviously, is the whole visible policing environment. If you go to, later in the text, to visible policing, you will see a breakdown of visible policing into its sub-programs and even into its elements. We don't have time today to do that, but I think it is easily to read, and you can then see program, sub-program, elements. The fact is, if you look at the three big sub-programs in visible policing, it will be crime prevention, border security, and specialized intervention. Crime prevention, we all know. Border security, we all, it's a well-known concept. And then specialized interventions, which is the whole ORS environment, or embedded in the ORS environment. Then we also have administration, 21.3%. Now you might ask, why is administration 21.3%? In administration you will find all our stores, for instance. All our clothing, ammunition, which have not been issued yet. You will find all the IT systems we have. We have an excess of 55 platforms, or in everyday language, more than 50 systems. And it's not just the ordinary systems, there's a lot of systems. Then also, you will find your whole training environment is embedded there. And remember, we have training institutions across South Africa. So, there's a number of aspects that you will find there. And then also, you will find there the secretariat transfer. If you then go to the green one, or let me put it to you, the pie to your top left, for those who don't have color-coded presentations, that 20.7% will be the detective services, which consists of crime investigations, the biggest one. You will also have forensic service laboratory in there, and you will have criminal record centers in there, and you will have specialized investigations. Then you will have your smaller environments, crime intelligence environments, and then also protection and security environment. Please, honorable members or chairperson, honorable members, the other chairperson, if you want to read more about this breakdown and year-on-year growth, at the back in your presentation under Program 1, you can see the comparative figures between this year and last year, and even further breakdowns. This is how it has been designed for this. This is the program structure, which relate to our functions. If I now go to the program structure, I don't refer to sub-programs and elements at this point in time, you will see that administration, that would be slide 33, that administration have a 6.3% growth. What you would find in there to a large extent are your information technology. You will find your medical support. You will find your human resource management, financial management. But the big one there is your logistical services, where your whole store environment is. So that's your typical support program. But we're different. We're not an administrative department which has only two vehicles. We've got 52,000 vehicles. You know, so before the issue, they go there, the same with clothing, the same with guns, the same with ammunition, the same with other communication like computers before they issued, and so forth. The CETA payment, the SLA between us and CETA to the value of 1.7 billion is also in there. So that is why it is. We defense correctional service to a certain extent. We have similar kind of compositions in program one. Then secondly, sir, visible policing. And the amount there is 38 billion. So you're coming from a quite a weighty level. Visible policing from 37 to 38, 4.9% increase in this regard. The big increases there, it was basically a spread. Crime prevention 4.87, border security 5.64, specialized interventions 5%, and then you have other smaller ones as well. Then your detective services.
I'll just touch it. Remember, they've got these numbers.
Okay, they have the numbers, they can look at it at the back.
Exactly.
You will find it under program two at the back.
Very important.
Okay.
Thank you.
Then we have the detective services, it's all around strength in terms of the percentage increases, reflecting those four sub programs. Crime intelligence in the vicinity of 7.97% is a very highly personnel intensive environment, but we have to provide for the personnel and for the operations, except the Secret Service account, which is not part of this vote, then protection and security services, where we have the VIP protection, the static and mobile, and so forth. So, sir, all in all, I think one can, to a certain extent, see that there are growths, some a little bit more, some basically in the region of your CPI, although we're not doing real-term budgets, we're doing nominal-term budgets. You know, this is how the state is working. The fact of the matter is, that is why I say I would describe this as a holding or maintenance budget to a large extent, although there will be growth in certain environments. If I now look at quickly at the economic classification, sir, and the economic classification, we've now looked at the programs. And those programs are descriptive of nature to say, we investigate, we detect, we protect, we secure, and it links directly to that section 205 also of the Constitution. This is how these programs are designed. One would immediately then also see another graphic illustration. It's the same amount which we have now split according to our economic classification, the goods and services. You know it very well, and you will see. If you look at the big slice there, sir, or chairperson, you will immediately see that it is for compensation. Compensation related matters to the nearly 190,000 people that we have. You have to pay them, a large amount is fixed. So like salaries and those kind of things, there are some discretions in it, like overtime and so forth, but this is the fixed amount. Then we have the goods and services, 19.2%. And then we have also buildings and fixed structures. Or transfer payments. Now, transfer payments are all those payments where you make a payment but you don't really get anything in return. It's an unrequited payment. Like a gratuity when a person leaves, you have to pay a pro rata service bonus. You have to. There's not a transaction in the sense that there's value received, so to speak. It's a social kind of payment. Those are the transfer and then your capital payments, which are to our environment, buildings and fixed structures, and to a large extent, machinery and equipment. If I now can go quickly then to the next one, which I would just like to maybe refer quickly to, and then we're nearly coming to the answer. Honourable members, via the chair, I've referred to we had to take some reductions in our growth in terms of goods and services and capital. If you now look at your, may I go to a screen, you will immediately see that on under compensation, you have basically 6.3%. Is currently or 5.8%, which is on the table from the employer side. Don't know whether we're going to end up there. And then also some other aspects which play a role, such as your allowances and overtime. Then you have your goods and services is 2.8%. Then it becomes 4.5 and 5. That is where that one reduction was introduced. That is why the growth, what was that, is now slower. So that was the 2.8%, but then later on it starts growing again. So it's to a certain extent the holding budget. Transfers and subsidies, you don't really have an inflationary debate there. It depends on how you see what will be paid, and also the secretariat as a designated department's funds are in there. Then payment for capital assets. If you look at payment for capital assets, a very interesting curve that you might find there. Buildings and fixed structures are basically, to a certain extent, a maintenance of 999 million and 1.052 billion, and then it goes up again to 1.104 billion again. Machinery and equipment is the one I would like to explain. And if I can just say to members, you will see that there's a 2.2 reduction in year 1516, from 1415 to 1516. That is where they also took money away, which went back to the exchequer. Then you will see in the second year, there's again a 3.2% increase. But now look in year 3. There's a 52% increase. So what it does for 2 years, they needed money, and in year 3, they've added back a whole lot of money in order to make up for the previous year. So what was done by our superiors was that for 2 years it was reduced a bit, and year 3 it was added back and even more in respect of machinery and equipment. So what we will do is we will have to maintain, we can even a little bit grow, but maintain our machinery and equipment for 2 years, and then it goes up significantly, because in anybody's language 52% is massive. The biological assets is a 6 million, the 1 million increasing, such as the dogs and the horses, it's a minimal. So what we've said there at this point in time, let's provide 6% or 6 million there for 1560. That is just what I, and now I relate it to the earlier slide, which relates to our allocation. Next one, please, Kevin. If we look, this is just to give you an indication. We said nearly 76% is compensation expenditure, and it is 57 billion. How does it look? What does it consist of? Now, obviously, there's a number of small items for a couple of hundred. But if you categorize it in the wage bill, the salary, the pension, the bonus, the cost of living, enlistment, care schools, etc., is 46.9 billion. Your allowances, which we pay in the vicinity of 2.117 billion, such as the service allowance. Your overtime is in the vicinity of 475 million. The rental and housing allowance, which is also a very, very big, prominent objective for the past 4 or 5 years of government, where you have either if you buy a house, you get subsidy, or if you rent a house, you get an amount, is in the vicinity of 1.8 billion. And then our medical schemes for our Police Service Act and Public Service Act in the vicinity of 6.5 billion. Total 57.885 billion. We can then conclude, Chairperson and honorable members, by saying the following in the next slide. Departmental spending over the medium term will be in relation to the core programs with visible policing close to a 51% weight of the total vote in 2015-16. The detective service in terms of weight is also a discernible portion of nearly 21%. I'm talking about direct costs for those two programs. Compensation of employees will remain the largest driver of spending. constituting nearly 76% of the total budget for 2015-16, providing for remuneration costs and existing projected personnel numbers over the period 198042 personnel from 15-16 onwards. Operational expenditure, including goods and services, transfer payments, and payments for capital assets, total 20%, 26% in 15-16. The growth rate for the road from 14-15, not the average one for the 3 years, but from 14-15 to 15-16 is 5.3%. Mark, can I just conclude by saying one should not merely just look for the total growth if one wants to do a comparison. The fact of the matter is certain matters such as certain of your transfer payments do not have a 3 year CPI. If two members settle for an amount, let's say in a civil claim, there's no inflation, there is an amount. That's, you don't add every year an inflator, so to speak. Yes, you might have the inflator when medical costs and so forth are applicable. Be that as it may, Chairperson and honourable members, this is basically the overall aspect. As I've said, if you want to read more about the specific breakdowns, you will find it under each one of the five programs just after the performance indicators and the targets. Thank you, sir.
Do you want to add, Senator? It's fine.
Sure, thank you very much. I'll ask the DNCs of the specific environment to quickly, very quickly, really touch on highlights of the targets that we have set for this cost-effective strategy. Let me start with General Begay.
Thank you, National Commissioner, and thank you, Chairperson, and honorable members. I will just present the targets, and when presenting the targets, I'm just going to mention the strategic priority, the performance indicator, and the target. I will leave out all the other information, which is talking to the baselines and everything.
On this one, sorry to interrupt. On this program one, the targets that we're looking into, we're not including the ministry. The ministry is included here. We give an allocation to them. But we're going to look at all the management issues, the finance, the SCM and all those, and then corporate services as well as our facilities.
Thank you, National Commissioner. I'm going to present the targets for corporate service management. Corporate service management includes human resource management, human resource development, legal services, strategic management, auxiliary services, as well as integrity management. The first strategic priority that we have is establishing an adequate human resource capability. And we are saying the performance indicator there that will show that we have performed is the percentage of filled posts in terms of the approved establishment. And we are saying our target in terms of 2015-2016 will be to maintain a minimum workforce of 98% in terms of the approved establishment. In brackets, we're talking about 198042, the fixed establishment. The second performance indicator, the percentage of service terminations finalized within 60 working days. And we are saying as a target there, we will try and ensure that people pay out at 95% at least. We are complying with that. We will ensure that we have paid out the payments of the people. The second strategic priority, or the next one, is establishing an adequate human resource capability. It's a continuation. Average time taken to fill vacant funded posts. And we are saying in 2015, we will comply with the government prescripts of ensuring that 100% of posts are filled within 3 months after approval by the Human Resource Committee. Investing in human capital development as, and I mean, one priority. There we are saying the performance indicator will be percentage of learners declared competent upon completion of their training in terms of the training provisioning plan of the South African Police Service. And we are saying in 2015 the target would be 96.5% of learners declared competent in the trainings that they have undertaken. Then we, I mean, the next performance indicator under human, I mean, investing in human capital development, percentage of learners and artisan training implemented in terms of the planned program. We are, I mean, we are saying 85.5% of the, I mean, learnerships and artisanship training implemented. And we are not talking about the competency rate there. We are talking about the implementation because we are considering the factors that are associated with the implementation of programs that are provided by external providers, which are funded by the CETAs. Sometimes the organization has no control over the processes that they follow. Hence, we are talking about how many learnerships will be implemented, how many artisan and ship training will be implemented. Percentage of learners declared competent upon completion of K53 driver training for the, I mean, police officers. And we are saying in 2015-2016, 94% of learners will be declared competent on completion of their K53 driver training. Then we say percentage of bursaries dispersed for policing and skills related qualifications. And we are saying, I mean, there we are going to be considering the skills that are there, but also the policing related. But in totality, we are saying 2015-2016, 100% disbursement of the bursaries, whether they are from the policing, impact from the policing as well as the skill included. Because sometimes you don't get enough applications in terms of the skills alone. Number of internships undertaken. We are taking interns in the organization. I think the National Commissioner has alluded to that. And we are saying, in terms of the 2015-2016, we will increase the intake of the interns into the organization by 10%, from 306 interns in 2014-2015 to 336 in 2015-2016. Then we're saying percentage of operational members declared competent in the modules use of a handgun and legal principles. I think here we're talking about firearm competency. But the firearm competency, although there are three firearms that, I mean, that are always involved, the R5, the handgun, and the shotgun. But because the handgun is the basic weapon, I mean, for policing, the focus in 2015-2016 would be to ensure competency in the handgun for all operational members of, I mean, of the organization. And, and we are saying here 92%, I mean, competency rate will be looked at in terms of the handgun competency. An effective discipline and integrity management capability, that's another, I mean, a strategic priority. Then we are saying percentage of disciplinary cases finalized within the stipulated time frames. And in 2015-2016, we are aiming at ensuring that 90% of the cases are finalized within 90 days, I mean, in terms of discipline. Percentage of reported incidents of corruption by members investigated in 2015-2016, 95% of those should have been investigated. Then if we go to the next strategic priority, improving the health and wellness profile of the organization. The performance indicator is percentage of employees risk during proactive employee health and wellness programs. Our target there is 95% for 2015-2016. If we can ensure that 95% of our members at least are reached through proactive programs. Then the second indicator, percentage of employees reached in relation to EHW-related requests received. That's a reactionary one now, not a proactive one. And we are saying 100% of the members will be reached, because if there's a specific request, it has to be attended to 100%. Percentage of operational employees debriefed subsequent to attending a crime scene and operations in relation to requests received and incidents being reported. Then we are saying we will, without fail, accomplish 100% debriefings in terms of that. Still continuing with improving the health and wellness profile of the organization, we go to the management of leave in the organization. Average acceptable rate of unscheduled absence, and we are qualifying the unscheduled absence then either through sick leave, incapacity, I mean leave. And we are saying in 2015-2016, we will maintain a maximum of 5.75% at least, absence of the people in terms of sick or incapacity leave. The number of days taken to capture leave transactions, and we are saying a target of 92% within 14 days should be captured. Percentage of employees who take 10 days compulsory leave, because we maintain that the environment in which police work is a stressful environment, and it becomes important that at least a person takes 10 days consecutive, 10 consecutive days for leave. And we are saying a minimum of 65% of the employees at least should take that leave of 10 consecutive days. Continuing the strategic priority, a properly regulated and effective organizational design and development capability. And we are saying in 2015, this is a new, a performance indicator. Number of police stations demographically analyzed to inform resource allocation processes. That is the performance indicator. And there, we're crafting the target in terms of the police stations. That out of the 1138, police stations, we will probably focus on the 379. That is because of the nature of the work. Not necessarily analyzing the station per se, but the population around the station. That's what we mean when we talk about the demographics analyzed around the station. Not that we are talking about the population of the station, but the population served by the station. The second indicator, the performance indicator, is percentage of structures approved against the organizational design and development plan. That is inward now in the organization in terms of the different units that are sitting there. And we are saying 100% of those structures that have been, given should have been done. The number of structures, that's the other indicator, reviewed in terms of the three-year rolling plan, and we are saying the target will be 11 business units of the organization whose structures will be reviewed, and all those will have to be done within the 2015-2016.
Chair, I then request the agenda of sketches with the indicators, slide 51 to 54, that has got to do with indicators coming from supply chain management, which is responsible for general schedule.
Thank you, Chairperson. The first thing, and I will stick to the same format of strategic priority, kind of performance indicator, and then target. As we said previously, we've got a few critical items. The strategic priority is improvement of requisite resources to sustain quality service delivery on strategic priorities. The first one is vehicles, the second one is firearms and bullet-resistant vests, and the third one are to prevent losses of those firearms. What do we say? Ratio of personnel to vehicles, which imply that the better the ratio, the more vehicles you have available, is the target is one person for one vehicle for 4.51 persons. That's a ratio which we would like to maintain at least, or even improve in the current financial year. The second one would be percentage of firearms and bullet-resistant vests distributed. As we always say, it doesn't help you buy them and they are in the stores. It must be in the hands of the members. So what do we say? We say 100% firearms and bullet-resistant vests, because it also leads to the safety of our members. Plan for, procured and distributed. If you plan for so many, you must procure them and you must distribute or issue them. And then the third one, percentage of official SAS firearms not being marked. The marking is to give it a unique identification mark, which makes it even more difficult for people to use one if they use it to determine whose weapon it was. Then also, if we go to the next slide, please, Colonel Stein, for slide number 52. Now we get to the facilities environment, infrastructure development and public access to policing services, percentage of planned police facility projects completed as per the SAS infrastructure development plan, and it includes capital works, it includes leases, and it includes maintenance. And we say, we're looking here at 80%, if we can achieve, it's an immovable environment, very difficult, DPW, I don't have to elaborate, the fact is a difficult environment, the moment you go to the facility, if we can achieve 80%, we would say, we think it's a good level to achieve. Obviously, the strive is for more. Percentage variation from the approved infrastructure project budget, we say 20%. Now, you will see it's both basically 80-20, 80-20. It's not necessarily that deliverables will equal funding. For instance, you might build 3 police stations, but you haven't, and it's already been erected, but you haven't built the fences yet. So you will have a high expenditure level, but you will not necessarily have achieved all your deliverables because your fences must still be built. Be that as it may, this is indicative of nature, and we put it there. The next slide then, which goes to the IT environment, research, enhancing information systems and information and communication technology to support the business objectives of the SAS, percentage of identified information and communication technology, infrastructure sites modernized, implemented, and maintained, a new performance indicator, and we say, if we can achieve 95%, I think we would have done well, it's high, but we are striving for that. The next one is percentage prioritized information systems, IS solutions developed, implemented, and maintained within SAS. You say if we can achieve 70% of that, we will think it will be significant progress. Obviously, you have to maintain what you have, but this is for the specific indicator. Percentage of IS ICT governance approved, implemented, and approved within SAS. We say if we can get to 60% to enhance our environment, we would have progressed significantly, and the percentage of the allocated budget spent on approved ISICT projects is 98%, which is very high in order to say, on all the approved projects, I'm going to spend that money, but be that as it may, this is what we are aiming at. If we then go to the last one, slide number 54, you will see there we also have the financial management capability indicator. But remember, normally there's 40, 50 pages of financial information which are anyhow in your annual reports, which are actually your big indicators. Income statement, balance sheet, and those kind of things. So these are merely activities, but we've included this one. Percentage of legitimate invoices paid within 30 days. We say if we can make 98% for 2015-16, we think we would have achieved. We pay in the vicinity of 1.7 million invoices. We've got approximately 4,000 users at this processing from Messina to Cape Town, from Durban to Pofadder. So this is it. The only one that remains now is, I think, General Sitoli. Thank you, sir.
Chester, you? We then deal with Flight 55 to close the administration. I'll ask them to take a touch on those. And then,
thank you, Chairperson. I think it will start on page 54, the compliance and assurance provisioning as a strategic priority. Percentage reduction, that's a big indicator, in new incidents leading to civil claims lodged against the SAPS. And we are saying by 2015, we will still try and reduce the issue of the civil claims by 3.4%. Not an easy, target, that one, but, we will try. Then the other indicator under that is percentage of legally vetted contracts and agreements in relation to the number of requests received, and the compliance there will be 100% in terms of that vetting. On page 55, under the same strategic priority, compliance and assurance provisioning, we are saying percentage of policies drafted in relation to the number of requests received. And we are saying 100% of those will be dealt with. All requests that are received in terms of policies that come to that environment, they will be dealt with. Percentage of policies reviewed in terms of the three-year rolling plan, we are saying in 2015, 2016, 10%. We're talking about the reviewing now of the existing policy in terms of that one. In the first one, we're talking about the development of the policies. Then, if you go,
can I deal with that one that follows? Internal audit chairperson reports to the on the last indicator on page 55. It's a portfolio that I'm responsible for. We set up a combined assurance, and in terms of combined assurance, we're saying we need to cover our entire stations. No stations should not be visited in a year. We have the AG taking a particular number of stations. We have a number of stations being visited by the internal auditor. It's about 245. And then the inspectorate visits the 790 that you see illustrated there. And then the remainder thereof is taken care of by what we call the factory visits by the management. What we are illustrating there are the number of visits that would have to be conducted by our inspectorate in the various stations. That's what. And we're seeing 790 of those go to the inspectorate.
On page 56, still under compliance and assurance provisioning, the performance indicator sitting there is the percentage of recommendations of the Independent Police Investigative Directorate, that is the IPID, implemented. Those recommendations that they bring to the SAS. And we are saying we will strive to ensure that 85% of their recommendations are implemented. Those that come from the IPID and they come to the South African Police Service, for implementation. And then the last two, I think the National Commissioner will also deal with them. It's about the number of repeat audit findings from external assurance providers like the AG.
Chairperson, in terms of those ones, we have to respond to findings of the AG, of the internal auditor, of the inspectorate. The ones that were mentioned in there are the repeat findings that comes from the auditor general. And our target for the current year is we are saying we need to reduce from the number to at least deal with at least a maximum of two repeat audit findings to show that we are progressively reducing the repeat findings that have been given to us by the AG. The last one talks to percentage of audits completed. In terms of the internal audit plan, I've mentioned the 790, which is the inspectorate. And in terms of the internal audit, we are saying that 240 something that they have to do, they must complete all of them, the 240 plus nations that they have to do with them, but they must complete 100% of those allocated to them. And that chair closes program one. We can then quickly ask General Tole to deal with visible policing, which is program two. And under program two, chairperson, we are focusing on programs that deal with crime prevention, border security, and specialized interventions. He will start on page 62.
Thanks, Chairperson. Thanks, National Commissioner. Chairperson, just quickly, starting with the principle, the determination of our targets will vary as we continue. In certain instances, we're looking at the 13-14 financial year performance. We also use the estimated performance of 14-15. We also then look at average of the previous years in calculating some of our targets. Then we're looking at target-based resource planning in order to determine some of them. I'm going to follow the same principle. I'll address the strategic priority indicator and the 15-16 target. Our first strategic priority, Chairperson, is reduce levels of serious crimes, including crimes against women and children. The first indicator is number of reported serious crimes, and our 15-16 targeted performance is 1.790 for 28. The second indicator, number of reported crimes against women, and our 15-16 targeted performance, 168,159. Then the third indicator, number of reported crimes against children, and our 15-16 targeted performance is 45,034. And the next indicator is number of reported crimes for unlawful possession of and dealing with drugs, and our 15-16 targeted performance is 294,627. Continuing chapter 10 to slide 3, addressing contributors to crime. The first indicator there is percentage of stolen lost firearms recovered in relation to the number of firearms reported or stolen or lost. Our target performance for 15-16 is recover a minimum of 85% reported stolen or lost firearms. The second indicator to central priority is percentage of stolen or lost state-owned firearms recovered in relation to the number of firearms reported or stolen or lost. The 15-16 targeted performance is recover a minimum of 24% reported stolen or lost firearms. Then going to slide 54, Chairperson, same strategic priority addressing contributors to crime. First indicator, percentage of stolen or robbed vehicles recovered in relation to the number of vehicles reported stolen or robbed. Our 2015-16 targeted performance is recover a minimum of 50% of reported stolen or robbed vehicles. Then proceeding to slide 65, addressing contributors to crime. The quantity of illicit drugs confiscated as a result of police actions. Our 15-16 targeted performance, it's increasing by 3%, and then under cannabis, which is 283,817,272. And then proceeding further, it
It's 226883, and Mandrake is 113150 kg of cocaine. Then proceeding further down is 267552 kg of crystal meth, and then 3.077 kg of heroin. Proceeding to slide 67, strategic priority, quality, service delivery, and responsiveness. The percentage of police stations rendering, it's slide 66. Yes. The strategic priority is still addressing contributors to crime. The first indicator, volume of liquor confiscated as a result of police actions. The 15-16 targeted performance increased by 3% to 1.846243 liters. Second indicator, percentage of persons escaped from police custody versus arrested and charged. Our 15-16 targeted performance is not exceeding 0.48%. We did not perform well on this particular indicator in the previous financial year. Then quality, service delivery, and responsiveness continuing. The first indicator, percentage of applications for firearm licenses and permits, authorizations, and competency. Our targeted performance for 15-16 is 90% of applications finalized. Actually, it's within 90 days. Then continuing with quality, service delivery, and responsiveness, next indicator, percentage of police stations rendering victim-friendly service to victims of rape, sexual offenses, domestic violence, and abuse based on the minimum criteria. Our targeted performance for 15-16 is 100%. Enhancing partnership policing, which the National Commissioner explained earlier on. First indicator, percentage of police stations where sector policing has been implemented according to the minimum criteria. Our 15-16 targeted performance is 95%. Why 5% down? It includes the new criteria adjustment, which talks to the sector policing profile. The next indicator, percentage of operational community policing forums implemented at police stations according to set guidelines. Our 15-16 targeted performance is 99%. Continuing to slide 68, strategic priority enhancing partnership policy. Number of rural and rural-urban mixed police stations implementing the minimum criteria of the four pillars of the rural safety strategy. Our targeted performance for 15-16 is 637. Which is cumulative. Second indicator, number of crime awareness campaigns conducted. Our 15-16 targeted performance is 65. This particular indicator, it's subject to adjustment because it includes only those particular awareness campaigns conducted by the Minister, the Deputy Minister, and the National Committee. There's a number of others that have been conducted in terms of the community outreach. Number of schools linked to police stations to advance the school safety program. Our targeted 15-16 performance is 5,000 schools linked. Slide 69, Jefferson, strategic priority, effective border security management. Percentage of crime-related hits reacted to as a result of movement control system and electronic, that is, movement control. The 15-16 targeted performance is 100%. The second indicator, movement control system screening unwanted persons circulated, stolen, or robbed. Our 15-16 performance, we maintained 100%. The next slide, slide 70, which is the last slide. Strategic priority, police incidents
of a public disorder or security nature, which are not deemed to be normal crime. A percentage of medium to high risk incidents stabilized in relation to requests received. Our 15-16 target performance 100%. Therefore, I'm talking to the National Intervention Unit. The second sub talk to the Special Task Force, which is also 100%. And then the last one talks to Public Order Police Unit. It's also targeted at 100% for 15-16. The next strategic priority safeguarding of available and or dangerous cargo. Percentage of safe deliveries of available and or dangerous cargo in relation to the number of cargo protection provided. This includes the Reserve Bank. Our 15-16 targeted performance is also 100%. Thank you, sir. Thanks, Mr. Coach.
Chair, through you, we then continue to program 3. The targets that are going to be presented are targets that deal with program 3 has crime investigations, which is our detectives, special investigations, which are sitting in DPCI, the criminal record centers, where we fingerprint and all those issues, and the forensic science laboratory, which is our back-end testing and assessment platform. I will ask General Stoller to then deal with slide 76, I think, through to 80.
Thank you, National Commissioner. Thanks, Captain. I'm not going to repeat it. The principle applies the same. I'm going to move straight to the third strategic priority, which is effective investigation of serious crime. The first indicator, the detection rate for serious crimes, our targeted performance for 15-16 is 41.05%. With the targeted numbers, I'm not going to state them. The second indicator is percentage of trial-ready case dockets for serious crimes. Our 15-16 targeted performance is 69.00%. Then the conviction rate for serious crimes, which is the next indicator, our targeted performance for 15-16 is 87.65%. The last indicator on the strategic priority detection rate for contract crimes, our targeted performance for 15-16 is 58.95%. Proceeding second to slide 77, strategic priority effective investigation of serious crimes, percentage of trial-ready case dockets for contract crimes is the first indicator. Our 15-16 targeted performance is 65.40%. The second performance indicator, conviction rate for contract crimes, our targeted performance for 15-16 is 79.77%. Detection rate for crimes dependent on police action for detection, which is third indicator, targeted performance for 15-16, 99.50%. Next indicator, percentage of trial-ready case dockets for crimes dependent on police action for detection. Our targeted performance 15-16 is 65%. The last performance indicator is the conviction rate for crimes dependent on police action for detection. Our 15-16 targeted performance is 97.15%. Going to slide 79, Jefferson. Strategic priority effective investigation of crimes against women and children. The first indicator, conviction rate for crimes against women 18 years and above, which include murder, attempted murder, or sexual offenses, common assault and assault GBH. Our targeted performance for 15-16 is 82.69%. Next indicator is detection rate for crimes against children under 18, including the same crimes, murder, attempted murder, sexual offenses, common assault, as well as assault GBH. Our targeted performance for 15-16 is 70%. Going to slide 80, a strategic priority, effective investigation of crimes against women and children. The first performance indicator, percentage of trial-ready case dockets for crimes against children under 18, which include crimes, murder, attempted murder, all sexual offenses, common assault, and assault GTH. Our targeted performance for 15-16 is 66.68%. The second indicator, which is conviction rate for crimes against children under 18 years of same crimes, our 15-16 targeted performance is 75.26. I will stop here and wait for next action of the Sheriff Commissioner. Thank you.
Chairperson, indicators that are sitting on slide 81, 82, and 83, as I indicated earlier on, is that those are indicators that we get from the specialized investigation from GPCR. I include them in our plan because they share with us in vote 23. We are indicating what is it that they would be delivering on, and I'm hoping that at an appropriate time it would be necessary for the head of GPCI to perhaps expatiate on some of these issues. But I would like to bring them to your attention to say indicators on slide 81, on slide 82, and on slide 83, the first indicator in slide 83, are all the indicators for DPCR. I then would request General Sole to then continue from the second indicator on page 83 to finish off the indicators that are sitting in his environment. General Sole.
Thanks, Chairperson. Chairperson, the first strategic priority on this slide is improving the procedures for updating the records of offenders. The first indicator is percentage of original previous conviction reports generated. Our 15-16 targeted performance is 94% of original previous conviction reports generated within 15 calendar days. And going to slide 84, the strategic priority processing of forensic evidence. The first performance indicator is percentage of routine case exhibits finalized within 28 working days. Our 15-16 targeted performance is 93% of routine case exhibits processed within 28 working days. The second indicator is percentage of non-routine case exhibits finalized within 75 working days. Our 15-16 targeted performance is 76% of non-routine case exhibits processed within 75 working days. The last indicator on this one is percentage of biology intelligence case exhibits finalized within 63, that is, working days. Our 15-16 targeted performance is 65% of DNA intelligence case exhibits processed within 63 working days. Slide 85, strategic priority processing of forensic evidence. A percentage reduction in case exhibits exceeding the prescribed time frame of 28 working days is a new indicator. Our 15-16 targeted performance is that the backlog should not exceed 10% of case exhibits on hand. The next is that is a strategic priority is processing of forensic intelligence. Indicator percentage of ballistic intelligence case exhibits finalized within 28 working days is also a new indicator. Our targeted performance for 15-16 is 95% of ballistics intelligence case exhibits finalized within 28 working days. That is the last one. Thank you.
Chairperson, we are ready to present to the honorable members through you program 4 indicators, and under program 4, Chairperson, we are covering areas relating to crime intelligence, their operations, as well as intelligence and information management. And these are all the indicators that relate to our open part of our crime intelligence, not the covert indicator. To present this, Chairperson, from slide 91 to 94, I'm requesting General Zulu to walk us through.
Thank you, General. Good morning, Chairperson, honorable members. I'm going to look to the two sub-programs, which is the crime intelligence operations, as well as the information and intelligence management. I'll start with the sub-program A, which is the crime intelligence operations. In terms of the crime intelligence operations, our first strategic priority is to provide crime intelligence products to support crime investigation as well as crime prevention. It's where we're assisting and supporting all the support members in terms of addressing the crime. So the initial stage in terms of supporting is where you get the allegations, and then you have to verify the matter, whether the allegation is true or there are facts regarding that. Then it's where we're opening the inquiries. That is the first performance indicator, the number of inquiries investigated to find out whether the allegation is truth or is the truth or the effects on that allegation. Then from there, then we can operationalize the information. The second performance indicator there is the number of ad hoc operations conducted. And then the number of ad hoc operations, we talk about those operations that will give an intelligence to the operational unit to say, through intelligence, we've gathered there is this and this and that. And then the operational units will start now conducting the operations based on the intelligence given. Those that we talk about, the intelligence-driven operations, which exclude the undercover operations as well as the network operations. And then the third indicator in terms of our performance there is the number of network operations. Those are the operations that we conduct in order to either to disrupt a network or to address a certain network which is operating in doing a certain illicit activity around the area or any other operation. And then in terms of our targets, then for the 2015, the number of inquiries investigated, our target is 13,350. In terms of ad hoc operations, our target for 2015-2016 is 20,023, and the number of network operations is 759. All of this is an increase of 5% from the previous target. Then we go to slide number 92. In terms of slide number 92, we are looking at still with the operations to conduct the physical security threat assessment. We plan that with any physical security threat assessment that has been requested from us, we have to attend to all of them. So our plan there is to make sure that we attend to all the threat assessment that has been requested from us at 100%. And then we go to the second objective where we facilitate the international capability for reducing the transnational crime. So sometimes we have, as National Commissioner alluded in the beginning, that we are part of also the Interpol policing. So in terms of the transnational crime, we have to assist where there is a crime, it's across the border. National Commissioner usually has to say that crime does not have borders, they don't have the visas, they don't have even the passport. So we have to assist in every time where there is transnational crime that is happening. So our strategic priority there is to ensure and promote mutual assistance and cooperation between SAPS and other national and international law enforcement agencies to reduce transnational crime. And then our first priority indicator there is to make sure that there is a we assist in terms of the cross-border operations conducted in relation of the request received. So any request, if there is an operation that is going to be done in a cross-border operation, we must be there. So we must support 100%. This is our target in terms of that. And then the second one on this, page 93, our second performance indicator is the percentage of arrests of identified transnational crime suspects facilitated. So you find that the criminal operates in South Africa, and then after you find that that his Armenia is the police are looking for him or for her, will move into another country. Interpol then has to facilitate, once it's identified that this is particular person is in a particular country, we have to facilitate and make sure that the identified person is being has been arrested. So we are facilitating the extradition of that particular person. So then that should be 100% once the suspect has been identified. And then the third performance indicator is the percentage of Interpol cases files closed. You'll find that you'll find a request out of there are 192 member countries of Interpol. They will request to say we want this particular information as a red note from the Interpol. All those files that we received from the Interpol member countries or any other agents, we must make sure that out of the, all that we've received, at least the financial year, 70% of them have been closed. That is the last performance indicator in terms of the ensuring and promote mutual assistance and cooperation. Then we go to 94. In terms of the second sub-program, it's where now we're looking to the intelligence and information management. Here we're looking at the products that are being produced by crime intelligence in terms of addressing crime. The strategic priority there is provide crime intelligence products to support crime prevention and the investigation of crime. So such of those products is like when you profile a person, do an intelligence analysis report, you do a communication analysis, your interception analysis report, your crime threat analysis, etc., etc. So our performance indicator, there is a number of intelligence products being generated. In the year 2015, we plan 158,283. If you can see the previous, we had 261,993. Why we're on the 158,283? Because if you look at the footnote, it says those intelligence, the information that will be gathered at the station level by the CIO, which include the station, the crime patterns, the hotspots, as well as the research reports, they are no longer going to be reported here because they are being audited at the station level. So that information will be gathered at the station level. So that information, when whoever wants to audit that information, it will be audited at the station. So it does not form now the part of our main planning. And then the second priority there is the provision of intelligence reports to SAPS management. These reports usually we provide to the National Commissioner as our main client. We are producing them to the BOC, which is the Board of Commissioners. We produce them to the National Management Forum and also to the National Crime Combating Forum. So at least we must produce four strategic intelligence reports, which will guide the organization in terms of proactiveness and reactiveness in terms of addressing crime. Our target currently is four, which we can, it does not limit it to four. We can exceed our four based on what is the organization required from us. And also we are seeing that there's a need for the organization to know. And the strategic objective, the last one, is to supply crime intelligence relating to national strategic intelligence to NICO. Part of our function that we do is to make sure that we facilitate the national intelligence estimates for the country so that we can address all the threats that the country, feels these are the threats that can interfere with the security of the country. So those reports, we usually then, because they're coordinated intelligence, which comes from different departments, so we submit through NICO, at least as crime intelligence or as subs, we must produce 6 of those strategic intelligence to NICOC to make sure that we are mitigating the threats that are surrounding our country. Chairperson, thank you for that. This is the last slide in terms of crime intelligence.
Chair, our very last program is Protection and Security Services. And under the Protection and Security Services, we deal with 3 key aspects: the VIP protection services, the static security that we provide, and in terms of the national key points, the government security regulator services. I'll ask General Sitole to walk us through those indicators.
Thanks, Chairperson. Chairperson, following the same principle, our first, that is slide 100, our first strategic priority is safeguarding identified VIPs. The first performance indicator, the indicators are divided into 2 for protection, that is, and security services, as well as for the presidential protection service. The first indicator is percentage of VIPs provided with security without security breaches. Our target performance for 15-16 is 100%. Then the second indicator talks to presidential protection, which is percentage of VIPs provided with security without security breaches. Again, here 10%, the targeted performance for 15-16 is 100%. And then going to slide 101, strategic priority provision of static security. First indicator, percentage of security provided at government installations and identified VIP residences without security breaches. Our target performance for 15-16 is 100%. And then at the presidential level, the percentage of security provided at government installations and identified VIP residences. Again, our target performance for 15-16 is 100%. Going to the last slide, Chairperson 102, strategic priority regulation of physical security in identified government buildings and strategic installations. First indicator, percentage of national key points and strategic installations audited or evaluated. Our 15-16 targeted performance is 50% strategic installations audited, which talk to the number reflected. And for national key points, it's 100% of the national key points that is evaluated. Then for the presidential service, the performance indicator, percentage of national key points and strategic installations audited, again, this one, Jefferson, is 100% our targeted performance of 15-16. And this ends the presentation. Session, thank you.
Thank you very much. That is a very, very long story. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Commissioner. That's a good story. It's not bad at all. Our members, time now is 1:20. I think I can take this opportunity to ask the members if they need clarity and all that. Thank you. Over to you, members. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson. I have quite a few questions. The first one is, I would like to refer the Commissioner to the first strategic objective in the Crime Intelligence Turnaround Strategy. It says declaring war on crime. Then I want you to just find out, General, Times Live this morning, whether you've seen the article in that newspaper. It refers to policemen, investigators in Springs, who tortured possible witnesses to a criminal case. question is this what declaring crime or declaring war against crime means? We have in the past indicated that it is worrisome that we use that specific word. And this is just underlining the fact that declaring war on crime is this what it looks like. That would be my first question, and then obviously shouldn't that the use of those kind of words perhaps be reconsidered. The police is not supposed to be a force, it's supposed to be a service with which the community feels safe to interact with. I'm sure you would agree with me. The second part of that question would be, what steps are you planning to take in dealing with police service employees that resort to this sort of crime? And I would like to go beyond the normal disciplinary steps. These are serious crimes, and they are actually jeopardizing the trust the community has in the police. My second question is, the staffing plan for 2015-16 provides for the appointment of 100 deputy station commanders. Now, you indicated that there are just over 1,138 stations in the country. Why only 100? Is it just in the beginning phase? Are you planning on rolling it out to others as well? My third question is, the health and wellness of active SAPS officers are government priority for this parliamentary term, 2014-19, and the Deputy Minister of Police is mandated to champion this. But I can find nothing in the APP for this coming year that mentions anything about the health and wellness of active SAPS members. Next question. How many operational members have got their case at 53 driver's licenses? If you can just give an indication percentage-wise, more or less, how many of them. You must stop me if I must go further. My fifth question. You indicated that you have just over 50,000 active vehicles in the police service. Yet, in a province such as the Free State Mine, one of the big problems that we actually have most of the time with not only one or two stations but quite a few of them is that the police can't react quick enough because they don't have vehicles. I believe 50,000 odd vehicles should be sufficient for the police service. How then do you get police stations that actually have that problem, and what are you planning on doing to address the problem? Then another issue that we have in my province is that some police stations, and I believe it's the mass in other provinces as well, are being downgraded despite the population that's growing. I just want clarity on why that occurs, please. Next question is, in 2013-14, you indicated that 74,000 members were prioritized to be trained for firearm competence. That's in the previous year. How many of them have been trained? And I can't find an indication of what your target is for this year for firearm training for service members. Second last question, I'm almost there. Second last question is, almost all targets under the strategic priority effective investigation of serious crime have been lowered. Now, this target is based on the estimate performance of the previous financial year. Why have those targets then not been met, and why has these targets then subsequently been lowered? If you can just give me clarity on that. And my final question is just, it's worrying that VIP protection services have escalated with over $105 million rand. It's already worrying that almost every second public representative receives VIP treatment. Which in my opinion is not always necessary, but it's worrying that it's actually escalating with 105 million rand this year. If you could just give me some clarity on that as well. Thank you very much.
Thank you. I think, Commissioner, maybe other questions you can submit later if you feel that you don't have an answer now. Please feel free to do that. Any other member? Thank you.
actually, firstly, we have to applaud and of course welcome the presentation by the department. It is eye-opening, and of course it has most of the details. Although, Chair, we need, of course, sometimes to deliberate more on your annual report, because some of these issues that we need to question, they should be questioned in your annual report session. But, Chair, on the presentation that has been given to us, just clarity seeking as a general knowledge. You are speaking of public outreach programs. On your public outreach program, I just want clarity. How have you funded it to fund, how have you budgeted to fund your particular CPF programs? Because I was in outreach program. Do we have some kind of, what you call, stipend or whatever? Because I mean, those people are voluntarily assisting the SAPs on preventing crime and so on. They need to be encouraged and their moral needs to be, of course, uplifted in any way. The other one, yes, I think I must not ask it now. When you come back with your annual report, I'll have to question these other issues. But yes, our concern on your infrastructure maintenance, it is a serious concern. Last we went to a site visited KwaZulu-Natal, where we visited Escort Police Station. It is really a serious concern that we really focus on our maintenance, including your George Police Station, when we were in our taking Parliament to the people. It is really, of course, we see that we have allocated that, of course, but because of some constraint, you won't be able to do all those police stations. Yes, I was just saying, let's look at those. And again, within the very same issue of idea infrastructure, you have your socialized police station. I'll speak particularly at Malakin, Kwakuta. You have a satellite police station there that it has no adequate infrastructure. Particularly your electronic systems. I think it will be better that we speed up that process. Thank you. Thank you, Chair. Thanks.
Honorable Zeman.
I guess so. It's a feast for members today because we have short members. But no, thanks, Chair. I also, Chair, just to echo what my colleague next to me has said in terms of the picture that is painted through the presentation itself. Challenge is, in my view, having received this presentation for the past 6 years or so, I think there's a better picture. I think the path is now clearer that they are walking through or on in terms of what they are presenting. I see one of the questions that is, we've always asked consistently is the issue of the statistics, the target indicators, and that kind of thing. And I see that at least they are escalating. They are not stagnant for many years. They've been stagnant, and even going downwards. But I think they are going upwards now in terms of the performance. They are indicating improvements overall. So, I might have missed it in the input by the National Commissioner. The issue of given this work, this path that they presented to us, obviously, being a national competence, Chair, the major test to the success of this, in my view, is at the stations per se. And that brings me to the question of the question of monitoring and evaluating whether these targets are met. If they could share with us, in as far as that is concerned, Chair, there would be an appointment of deputy commissioners and that kind of thing. But these targets for this 12 months, how will they be monitored and be evaluated? What is the strategy there? meetings. I don't know what are the action plans there. And then also just a quick status in terms of the managerial vacancies, either commissioners in the provincial level and that kind of just it's more of where we are to look at what will happen in this 12 months in that regard, Chair. And then the other one, Chair, is the VIP Protection Pact program. Particularly the residential, the parliamentary residential. So I'm not sure what improvement. I'm just that this is a. I mean, you take Acacia Park. There's recent break-ins now, quite high. I mean, past weekend, Honourable Porter's house. You know, my house 2, 3, 4 weeks ago, somebody moved in, stole my equipment. So there's now some kind of a resurgence in criminal activities that are going on there, housebreaking, serious ones. Now, I'm not too sure, you know, I'm asking that because I don't know who's responsible. The alarm systems that are fitted in the park, I don't think they are functional. I don't know whose responsibility it is. I know they are a client of Public Works, but who's responsible for that? And also the responsibility to protect members there. There are issues of access. So what role do they play? For instance, say you have to get Goodwood police station to come in and to arrest. So I don't know if there's work that needs to be done there, but in my view, I'm not sure if the value for the money in there is. They may not have an answer, just like a general comment, a view would suffice. But I think it's a matter that is also important to raise. And obviously, Chair, we note that these are the commitments that they are making that we'll have to monitor in terms of their performance for this financial year, Chair, and this not being an annual report. An annual report for 2014-15, it gives us quite a tool to monitor the performance going forward. But I think, Chair, the issue on a lighter note, the issue on declaration of war against crime. I think, Chair, it's a matter we will debate with my colleague at the debate, at the budget vote, declaration of war on crime. So we will be ready, Honorable Makarakis, to engage you on that one. It's not their matter. I think it's part of some of us that prefer a declaration of war on crime. So we'll meet at the debate.
Thank you, Honorable Zimande. Mine is just, well, they are talking about commission about 35% of women. Well, thank you for that. But you are telling about the disabled people. I don't know whether in police you don't have disabled people there. Then, but your report is so silent. And also you were talking about you are vetted by vetting. Your vetting is from SFA. What about the vetting of contractors and supply management personnel? Okay, who's vetting them? Thank you very much.
Chair, thank you very much. I will be dealing with these questions
together with my colleagues, I will refer to them as and when I get to the ones that I managed to note. Let me start with questions that have been raised by Honorable Member George. I must learn how to pronounce his name. Mikalakis. Yeah. Honorable Member Mikalakis. The first one is about the best story that is adorning our newspapers today, as well as your linking that to the war on crime. And I'm grateful that Honorable Member Mchanga has indicated that they would like to engage you further on that one. But I just want to say it is a phrase that is used and oppositely used, because crime is an issue that we have to deal with as a nation. I think South Africans are ordinarily very impatient with crime, and therefore we need to do something very serious about crime. And I think it's the same as you pick up this war on poverty. It's a word that is used over and over again when people want to show the intensity of engaging an ill issue that needs to be tackled. And I know you are linking it to this matter, and I think they are not linked. And I want to say, in terms of the article that you've seen, you would have noted that we acted very swiftly as a police. We called a press conference to tell the nation about it. Number two, we made sure that the people who committed this matter, IP, get involved and they get arrested. Our business is crime. And it doesn't matter where crime is happening, whether it's happening within the police or outside the police, it is our duty to ensure that we deal with that crime. We also have a second leg of dealing with this, and I would like to say to you, every police arrest is a reportable matter for us. Police criminality is a reportable issue. We track that over and above what IPT is doing. And we're not tracking it only for statistics, we're tracking it for intervention, because policing is a highly defined environment. We have protocols, we have instructions, we have standing orders in terms of how we do our job. It's very clear how you arrest. It is very clear how you investigate. It is very clear how you do everything that needs to be done in policing. For that reason, for each and every matter such as this one, there shall be a concomitant disciplinary process. And the disciplinary process will ensure that the relevant standards are meted. If it is dismissal, so be it. We are going to the Regulation 12 investigation on this matter, and that Regulation 12 investigation will tell us precisely what needs to happen post this matter. And we've done it with all the cases that they've mentioned in the press today. We do that all the time. And what is also very important to note is that if you look at the issues that you were mentioning, to say, you know, is war on criminality scaring, you know, and issues relating to brutality, we've gone a long distance as the police to really turn around that situation. We can never compare policing of post-1994 with policing of pre-1994. This policing is doing much, much, much more to ensure that the type of incidences are far less, and indeed when they happen, we can rest assured that as the police, we deal with it. You asked about the plans we're planning to take. At this point in time, these members that are arrested, there is immediate suspension as a result of the arrest. The one that we're looking for, as soon as we get that member arrested, he will be suspended, and all these processes of discipline that I'm talking about, internal, independent of the criminal process, will take place, because internal investigation is about police conduct. That's why I mentioned in our strategy that the institutionalization of our code of conduct is crucial, because when you transgress from that conduct, when you do not meet our internal protocols,
we don't even wait for the case. We run our process and we get to the conclusion of the matter. The issue of trust is high on the agenda for us. This is why we would never leave that a matter such as this to linger. When we also receive a report from IFID, we make sure that we deal with processes. We initiate everything that needs to be initiated. We account, we give feedback. And I can tell you that in terms of our IFID processes, we're operating at about 80% of initiating in terms of the issues that they are reporting. The issue of the deputy station commander, you are mentioning 100. What are you referring to? Where's your point of reference in terms of the report that we shared with you? Maybe if you can take us to that slide.
I might be wrong, Honorable Chairperson, but the way I read it, the staffing plan for 2015-16 indicates that. I have it on my notes here. I don't have it on the slide specifically. But if it's not only 100, then I might, well, can the commissioner then at least indicate how many they are then planning on? Because according to my notes over here, the staffing plan indicates about 100. If that's an incorrect figure, then I would love the commissioner to give me perhaps the correct figure. Thank you.
Chairperson, clearly it's not a matter that's addressed in terms of this, and that figure, I'm not sure where the honorable member get from. We are prepared to give you our submission in terms of how we will be rolling out the deputy station commander plan. Thank you, Chair. On the issue of EHW, Chairperson, our employee health and well-being, we've also shared our indicators and there's a whole turnaround strategy that we're putting into place. And I'd like Jenban Bekela to touch on issues of EHW, the employee health and well-being, because the honourable member saying we did not make any reference to EHW, but in our slide, our EHW, in this whole matter, we have indicators relating to EHW, and General Bekela can also talk about some of the turnaround strategies that we're planning to implement in that state.
Thank you, National Commissioner. I think we have articulated very clearly in terms of our targets that we are having. If we go to page 48 of the, for page 48 of the plan, that's where we start talking about the EHW programs that we are going to be implementing. And some of them are emanating probably even from the previous years. But we are focusing on the EHW. That is why we are talking about the proactive programs and we are talking about the reactive programs. And when we are talking about the proactive programs, for instance, we are having an MOU that you have signed with Old Mutual, which is about training our members in financial management in order to ensure, because we have identified that part of of the suicides and whatever, they are related to issues of managing finances by the members. And there's a program that we're rolling out with the, Old Mutual in order to ensure that we attend to that. But part of that, as well, we are not, actually articulating in a granular fashion what is going to be happening, but what is sitting in the strategies is that we are also working together with the HOLMET in terms of bringing proactive, programs to the members in terms of the healthy lifestyle, how people have got to manage their health. So I think, that we have not stipulated that the employee health and well program is well catered for in terms of the plan, and there will be programs that will be running out. They are sitting on the plan, and some of them are contained within the plan that we have illustrated.
Chair, perhaps I should also plan to that. Part of our turnaround strategy, we are looking at how, for instance, we have a number of, pastors. We are adding on to, we are looking at extending their role provision to do aftercare services to some of these areas where we find people who are having challenges.
challenges. And I think in the government department, we have the most robust EHW service. And we're planning to focus even more on that and to check whether we need to add more services in this area. And I have found, you know, even in terms of where we have tragedies happening, our EHW is highly responsive. And as General Bekela is saying, there are, you know, very mandatory debriefing sessions for people who are exposed to trauma, our police and all that. So it's a very robust service that is involved there. And we would be willing to, if you have an opportunity to share in time, our turnaround strategy in this place. There was a question around our K53 license program, and I'll ask you, General Bekele, to do that, to also deal with the firearms competence at the same time.
I think, General, if the Honorable Member is looking for a report, I would rather request, I mean, through you, General, that we submit a full report on K53, I mean, driver's license, as well as the firearm competency. Because when we do the generation of that report, we need to take cognizance of the people that have exited, that have, I mean, left the organization, even though they were trained and they would appear as competent. But we would like to give a report that is informative, that is going to indicate in terms of the status of the existing, I mean, existing people. So if I may request, General, that we submit a report, the two reports on firearm competency as well as the K53 driver's license.
Whilst we're waiting for that report, I do want to say our police have driver's licenses and tenders. And our police, in terms of firearms competency, remember there is a very compulsory training that they, there's compulsory training that they have to undertake. And the competency report, when it comes, it will show you in terms of those three guns to say there's one that no policeman should not have the ability to use. So nobody can ever say police are completely non-competent in terms of. And then there is elective use of the other types of firearms depending on where they are placed in the police. So our report will be able to give that. But I want to say a very broad statement here. Our police have the capacity to shoot and are trained in terms of the firearms that they are supposed to use for a particular environment. And our police can try. And also, when the report comes, you will note, Jefferson, that we also do transformational type intervention. At entry point, some of our children who come from the rural areas and very poor areas, where there is about 10%, where there is no driving school, we can't exclude them from policing. And this is why we have K53 programs such as this one, to ensure that whilst we're training them, we also train them on driving. We work with SACITA on that one because we realize transformational challenges of our country. And if that child has been brought up by an older man, a Gogo Ekaya who's getting a pension, there's not even a driving school in the village where I grew up from. And I understand that that child still has the right to be a police. So that 10%, we do set it aside and it becomes part of our K53 training.
Sorry, Chairperson, can we just get perhaps an indication as to how long it will take to compile such a report, please?
Chairperson, those time parameters, after a week, we can be able to give that report. A week, 10 days, we'll be able to give you all those, all the feedback that we promised to give
them. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Proceed, Commissioner.
There was the issue of vehicles that have been raised, and we have articulated that matter. General Skeeter will be assisting me in that regard. We have a 1-4.5 distribution of vehicles, and indeed, we are the largest owner of vehicles in this country. And thanks to this government, because it has managed to assist us to police the country. It has ensured that there's better visibility in terms of policing. But you talk about our reaction time and our quick response in the Free State, and I must say Free State is not one of, in terms of our indicators for response, is not one of the provinces that are struggling to meet the responses. In terms of the, and that's the data that we get from the provinces, so it would be interesting to see which data you're referring to, because we'll be looking at the feedback in terms of the data and whatever. If you were raising other issues around vehicles, maybe our garages, maybe those type of things, it would be a different story. But let me ask Jenda Skesi to deal with this matter.
Thank you, National Commissioner. Chairperson, through you. Just this more to it. Just this. We identified, even in 1230, that we should enhance the vehicle ratio of member to vehicle for two provinces. The one was Mpumalanga and the other one was Free State. The member to vehicle ratio at the time still within the norm performance indicator for Free State was 1, and that was the end of 2030, 1 to 4.44. At the end of 2014, it improved to 1 to 4.27. As at the end of last financial year, and we're now actually busy with the annual report stuff, it improved to 3.97. So it's well below the average. Can I just say, if I look at the number of vehicles that was purchased, it was 349 for the Free State. And if I look at the number of vehicles boarded, it was 264. Because less was boarded and more was purchased, the number grew and the ratio improved. So what I'm saying to you is, we have addressed a number of issues. The same principle also applied to Mpumalanga. So those we have embarked on the process to get their ratio also a bit lower. Now, why do we use ratios? Chairperson, through you, we have a ratio before for detectives, 1 to 2 for support, 1 to 14, whatever. We average it out and we say, if we average it out, it must be 1 to that 4.51 thing that's in the performance indicator according to norm. And if we are below it, we say we have enough vehicles. Now, you might sometimes get a scenario. You get to a certain station and you say the station has not maybe enough. But if you look at the province, it has enough. Then you will sometimes find that you might find a little bit of an under at one station and a little bit of an over at another station. That means operational distribution on ground level. Now, from national, we cannot say to PC1, PC1, you must be, we have an asset register per station, and actually, if you replace, you replace at the station. But it sometimes happens that you also have problems in one area vis-a-vis another in the same province. KZN, Gauteng, whatever. Then it might be, to address a crime scenario, that you say, I am taking vehicles from a station, let's say from Edenvale, and I place it at Ubra for a time being. So I'm technically decreasing it a bit with the one and increasing it. So the fact of the matter is, we work on these ratios, and as the National Commissioner said, we grew this fleet with lots of funds that came to the police over the years, and we grew it in relation to the number of personnel, and that's where the ratio comes from, and it's a different differentiated ratio. But all in all, Free State and Mpumalanga, latest figures, I didn't want to say because it's actually in the report, but the fact is, that is, we improved it significantly now. If you take the numbers and you improve it, let's say, from 4.27 to 3.97, it's a full one on a 5-point scale to a certain extent. So actually your numbers are increasing, or your ratio is increasing. The fact is, the figures illustrate significant improvement for Free State and also to Mpumalanga, and the other provinces also look highly credible. But sometimes, as the National Commission say, it could also be utilization issue, or it could be some other issue. but let me not speculate.
Chairperson, through you, in addition to this, I just want to say a lot has been done by government on the issue of fleet management. Internally, one of the principles we embrace is that our first priority when we buy cars is to replace the rented cars so that we can maintain our ratio. So if a car is rusted because it has exceeded the mileage that it's supposed to run, or it has been, you know, crushed beyond repair, we must replace. It's a very important principle that we take into account. The other issue that the issue of diversifying our offerings in terms of maintaining the vehicles. Many years ago, the state was not buying the car with maintenance plans, but now they do, which assists us to offload the burden on the garages. They've also introduced an RT56 tender with Standard Bank assisting to place cars for this type of routine maintenance, those that are on maintenance plan. So there are a few things that are happening indeed, and I'm sure we'll get on top of those type of issues. There's an issue of downgrading police stations. I actually also don't know what informs this, because we don't have it in our strategy, and perhaps if we can get the question again phrased so that we can look at what informs it and dealing with it. I'm not aware of us downgrading any station unless there are other processes. Maybe if there are specific stations, if we could know, then we would respond to that.
Chairperson, I would submit a written question rather to the Minister. I think that would perhaps be best.
Thank you. There was a question around lower targets for serious crime investigations. I'm going to ask the General Solicitor to deal with it.
Thanks, National Commissioner, through you, Chair. It has said that I just want to indicate the targets are not below the previous performance. What we would confirm is that they've been increased by what we can call an margin. They're not far away from that. But the Chair, firstly, I indicated in the beginning that we did what we call target-based resource planning. We've taken into consideration all the resources that we have in our previous performance, and then we started working out what are the resources that we have that will allow us to meet the target. But over and above that, we have proposed interventions on the direction of the National Commissioner in order to improve on these figures, as the Honourable Member has stated. The first one, we're busy now with the project on the reintroduction of the uniform investigation. With the reintroduction of the uniform investigation, we want to offload certain categories of crimes, which we can refer to as the less serious crimes, from the detectives, so that the detectives are able to concentrate on the serious crimes. And all those crimes, we are going to investigate them at uniform level. So that project is at an advanced stage. And then further to that, we've also designed the crime detection strategy. Within the crime detection strategy, we've introduced multidisciplinary task team investigations in order to enhance the investigation capacity so that we can be able to impact positively on the targets when we improve, or that is, on them. The last one, Chair, we have also decided to load all dockets for investigation, bring them to operations. The instruction of the National Committee has been that we hold what we call sustained operations throughout the financial year. And currently we've got Operation Fiela, and Ciela will be followed by Situin. So we link the investigation of the case into this particular operation so that we also address that is certain dockets through those operations. And that is how we will be reconsidering this particular target for the next one. Thank you.
Chairperson, the other question has to do with the allocations that have been given to protection and security services. First, let me just go back to slide 32 to indicate that that program accounts for 3% of our allocation. That's where we start, of our total allocation. And if you go to page 33, you will then note that the increase it received is about 8.7, and if you look into that and you do your CPI deductions, you realize that the growth is not as big as you as alarming as you put it, but also considering the fact that it's a low base, it's growth on a very very low base as opposed to the other areas that are taking huge targets, and it is an important area. But I'll ask General Getty to also comment on that.
Thank you. Thank you, Chairperson. Thank you, General. If you also go to, I suggest maybe go to slide 104 on your own time, you will see the sub-programs and you will see the growth. The 8.7 or 8.66% relates to basically your static and a little bit also to government security regulator. May I just say that these people work enormous long times and they travel with their office bearers. Don't just think about office bearers as our current people as in government. There's a lot of dignitaries coming from overseas which they do. There are events which they do, those dignitaries. I mean, I'm just taking, I don't say that person was here, but if the World Bank, head of the World Bank comes here, she might bring one or two of her own security, but there's a lot of security that goes around the hotel and so forth, or if anybody for that matter comes which is not government related, obviously also government. And those people work long hours and significant overtime. If I may then just reflect to two bullets. Compensation is a prominent element for all protection security functions with significant overtime costs. Travel and subsistence costs are also prominent. Now, yes, they have made a few appointments. I don't have the numbers with me in recent times, but the fact of the matter also is. And another thing, sir, if you take that and you take the 5.8% that we provided for salary levels 1 to 12, should that deal go through, currently remember, in the PSCDC, it's a 10% versus their 5.8. With the numbers that these people work, and your notches in your salary scale going up, your overtime is also going up. Because this is so highly personnel intensive program, we've provided for that. Rather that, then totally underestimate and have to shift funds at the end of the day. But the fact of the matter is also there's a lot of work that these people do, and you can't. There's very few dignitaries that know exactly now where they're going to travel in 3 months' time, and that is also. I know their planning is up to date, but the fact of the matter is, and things change. Thank you, Chairperson.
Chair, to close that one through you, let me also mention that we've mentioned in our strategy that one of the policing environments that we allocate resources for is managing significant or large national events, if I may say, for instance. And this environment of VIP protection and the operational environment of General Mawela are highly affected by that. Just this month, we are policing the AU summit and the World Economic Forum. And the people that come, they require this protection, people, because as General Skeppe is saying, they'll bring one or two
those 62 heads of state, when they come here, first make sure that we have the ability to give them VIP protection. So, on the Msanga, you raised the issues around the budget for CPF. The budget for CPF are not sitting with us as the police. The secretariat is the primary role player in this space. But we make sure that where CPF are implemented, we're able to work with them. And we give support, for instance, in terms of should they need, you know, support in terms of transport to do particular things, we do that. Should they need support in terms of some accommodation, office in some place, we do that type of thing. But we make sure that where they are implemented, we activate the connection and work with them. So the issues of stipends and all that, I've had them being discussed in the IMC, and the secretariat takes assist in those type of issues. The issue of infrastructure maintenance is a big one, because as I've indicated earlier on, we are the largest client of Department of Public Works. And there is a high dependency. We may be making the budget allocation here, but because a lot, only about 200 stations plus, 278 stations are devolved, where we can take responsibility for maintenance. The bulk of the 900 plus or so stations are with Public Works. So we are highly dependent on them being able to assist us. So that dependency has to be dealt with. We may want, we may plan, at times we even retain resources because their plan is not able to come to some of these areas. You know, removing a carpet or doing whatever you must negotiate. We can't talk to the people that we lease buildings from directly. We must work through Public Works. So there is a challenge in terms of this maintenance when it comes to that, because it's a highly dependent space, and our hands are tied. Where the default one, we're able to intervene and do things. So it's a challenge. At some point, maybe a joint session between ourselves and Public Works may assist. Honorable Zimande, you raised issues around the monitoring of these targets. Say we've shared these targets. The police are structured like it's a framework of government. Just like education, you would have the national head office, the provincial head office, the regional or district office, as well as the station. So we use that framework. With us, you have the station at the lowest level, then you have the cluster, which is more your regional. It's an office that deals with more than one station. It will have maybe 6 to 10 stations that they are responsible for, and then you have the province, and then you have whatever. We use that framework to monitor and evaluate. But secondly, for us to be able to deliver these targets, they've got to be sitting in the performance targets of all those that are responsible. Before I even look at what we call an annexa, a performance target of a provincial commissioner, which would be additional matters, all these issues that are sitting there, these targets, will come already, you know, being programmed to tell me how the province has done in terms of all these targets. And it's not even coming from, hey, it's actually system generated. Our performance management office would tell me to show me that in terms of this target, this province has not achieved it, and she must make sure that if she's not achieving, because if she's not achieving, I'm not achieving, the organization is not achieving. So she must make sure that those that are her deputy provincial commissioners, as well as her station commanders, also carry these targets in the area. That's when we start talking about individuals contributing to the performance. But we also do other things. We have what we call the station crime combating forums and the cluster crime combating forum and the provincial crime combating forum and the national crime combating forum, where we sit now and look and say, when it comes to operational issues and the targets that we've committed to, how are we doing in terms of those? So in those structures that are meeting frequently, they will also look at issues of performance. I would use, for instance, platforms such as the Board of Commissioners, because at the Board of Commissioners meeting, the MPEG, which is a requirement in terms of that tool that the government uses to measure strategy performance, governance performance, management and administration of departments, they come and take my minutes and check whether in our minutes we actually have time to discuss this performance indicators quarterly, and we submit. So even in my own management meeting, I want a progress report where we sit and say, like last week we had a meeting, I was looking at the last quarter to just say, guys, how have we done? Why didn't this one move? What are the issues? So performance is a discussion point in the FRF. At the BOC, one meeting with the provincial commissioners, I sit with the 10 provincial commissioners, performance is discussed. At the top 1,500, when I get there, we discuss performance. We want to see which provinces are doing what is not doing what. But those are the various platforms that we're using. So it's no longer that whole issue of taking a strategy like this and goes to the shelf and it's not worked on. And it's audited through that combined assurance that I've been talking about, compliance in terms of our own commitments. The AG will look at it, the internal audit will look at it, the forensic, the inspectorate will also look at it. So we use a multiplicity of platforms to look at how we are performing. And when we give our annual report, that is also doing other things. And then there are other areas where we have what we call transversal indicators. We as SDGs, together with the Department of a Monitoring and Evaluation, there are certain indicators that have been isolated out of these many ones to say, if government is to run better, what are the transversal indicators that we need to all deliver on? For instance, the 30-day payments. For instance, the number of days it takes you to fill a position, the number of days it takes you to pay particular things, and then there would be others that are talking to the program of action of government. So all those things are the various platforms that we use to discuss that type of thing. So if we go there and they say, who owes the municipalities, for instance, is one of the indicators that we're now adding as departments to say, municipalities are not able to function well because we as departments owe them. So we're adding those. It becomes a transversal indicator. And then when we sit in a meeting, we're able to flag it there to say, Department of Health, you seem not to be paying your bills. Police, you're not paying your bills. And we're held accountable for all those type of things. So it's a very structured process of dealing with feedback. And to the accounting environments, for instance, we'll be here in September to report. It's a backward-looking report to say we committed to this last year. How did we do? And by that time, you'll be having the audited outcomes because they audit the predetermined objectives as well as our finances. So we'll be here again to say, okay, we presented to you like we did this last year. Now this is how we've performed. So next year, September, we must come and tell you what we did about this commitment. And did we achieve, didn't we achieve the extent of achievement? Government has gone further to start looking at even, you know, minimum entry levels to say, when they say a department is doing well, they should have achieved what level of their predetermined objectives. So I think the introduction of the Performance Monitoring and Evaluation Department has done a lot to push us. If you look at my performance indicator, you'll see all these targets. I don't know how I'm going to achieve them. I must get all of them to run with me. Otherwise, I'm not performing. Okay. Thanks. The issue of managerial vacancies. Let me say, and I think General Mbekela will also come in here.
I'll just look for instance at our NMF positions, which is all the DDGs, including the provincial commissioners, as well as their respective sub-functions that they're responsible for. I think we're sitting at probably 95, above 90%, because I know that when we went to our committee, there is the issue of the CFO, and we had 6 vacancies at a DDG level. We've filled 4 of those. We have advertised for 2, finished the advertising, done the interviews. We are remaining with the integrity check. So it was only 1 position that we had to fill, which is the CFO. And you would know that with a budget such as this one, you're looking for a chartered accountant, and it's going to be huge competition when you are looking for those type of people and you're competing with the Absas and NetBanks of this world. It's a very serious process, but we've undertaken that by August we would also be giving a report on that remaining one. Ordinarily, I think we are not having leadership vacancies. I think the issue of VIP protection, the resurgence of criminal activities, again, those public works takes care of some of those issues, because the VIP protection we offer is the one that would be written, for instance, in the ministerial handbook to say this is what we would give a driver, we would give a protector, static at particular areas, not everywhere. And then in some of the areas, then, for instance, in the provinces, when you start looking at static provision for the MECs, that would be the Department of Public Works in the province ensuring that those things are taken place. But we can look into those and just give a written submission of how that works out. And we will raise the issue, Honorable Member, with at our JCPS staff and other people to look into this matter. Chair, you raised the issue around the disabled. There is the 2% requirement of the state, and I think we're about 1.6, and our challenge as a police is just the nature of work that we are doing, because we are saying perhaps it's not easy for us, because we are looking at a very limited non-police staff as compared to, you know, frontline staff that we require. We also leave space in terms of that non-operational staff for our members that we have to put on soft duties after they are injured on duty. So that dynamic will always be a leg for us to achieve the full percentage. And we are trying to negotiate that even with DPSA to say, can they restate the target for an environment such as ours? On the issues of vetting, there are two, you in particular SCM, we've already mentioned it as a priority in terms of the targets that Dr. Zulu was reading. But maybe just to create clarity for the committee, how we deal with vetting, the cabinet took a decision that SMS senior management positions should be, the vetting should be conducted by SSA so that we don't self-vet. Any other thing that is not done by SSA, our crime intelligence within the police manage that. And that's where we have built capacity to deal with that vetting. And I'm sure Dr. Gilly will also comment on this one. So because we are, you know, rolling out this bold vetting program, we've had to start saying there are other platforms that are burning where we need to almost immediately zoom into. And the SCM environment is one of those. So let me just ask Dr. Zulu to add on to this question of vetting.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, General. I think you've covered most of the information. The only thing that maybe I can add is just is that we prioritize the environments that are critical based on the risks that are being carried by the environment, like supply chain, working with the President's Office, PSS, CI and DPCI. Those are the environments that are critical and we are prioritizing when we are waiting. And then in terms of civilian intelligence, they do the suppliers in terms of the vetting, but it's a joint venture because they do a civilian vetting and we do the criminal screening in terms of the suppliers. So when they get the reports, before they issue the vetting certificate, they must have both the criminal part CV as well as the civilian part, and then they will be able to say you are clear or not clear.
Thank you very much, Commissioner. If anyone can say we are not working, we are working. Didn't even have a chance for a lunch. Can I ask one of the Sangha just to thank the General and his team, everybody who are here for today? Thank you very much. Over to you, Honorable Sangha.
Yeah, thanks, well, it is. Sometimes I just have to be given a mandate, such as that one. No, General Norman, we would like to appreciate you being coming to us and presenting such a good document to us. We believe that the very same document that you presented to us, it will also assist us when debating the budget vote, because it is more of an eye-opener and it has more target implications and so on. And yes, of course, I mean, part of the issues that we as politicians wanted to see in your presentations are there. Today we talk of your intents, wherein you train our people in terms of fighting poverty, and I mean, it's one of our objectives in terms of our state of the nation address. We really appreciate what you did, and of course, thank all whoever who attended here. I mean, if I said general, then it cascades to the kennels and so on. And also, I believe the media, which has covered this session, it will also, of course, report good things to say, yeah, SAPS is working as expected by Parliament. Thanks in that note.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much, Commissioner and your team. I didn't know that even police can be taken to the University of Harvard, where Honorable Mazgubuko is here. Thank you very much for training our members, giving this exam. Thank you very much. I think there is lunch outside. Thank you. Thank you. And this meeting is adjourned. Thank you very much. We're doing other parts. I think we need at least a break. Yes, we can.